days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
If I could have gotten 51 votes in the Senate of the United States for an outright ban, picking up every one of them, Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in, I would have done it.
When they give us that inch, that bump stock ban, we will take a mile.
You've heard people say, you'll have to pry my gun from my cold dead hands. Okay.
We have introduced an assault weapons ban.
I'm talking about a ban on assault rifles.
If you listen real close, you can hear the people in power shaking.
It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Enough.
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 We say no more.
I'm the guy that originally wrote the assault weapons ban that became law.
A gentleman just walked up to me in his picture line. He says, I have an AR-15, and I will turn this in if it means saving the lives of our kids. Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Do you think Trump is responsible for what happened? And I said, well, look, I mean, obviously he didn't pull the trigger, but he's certainly been tweeting out the ammunition.
I'm incredibly saddened, and it's very hard to think about this.
I'm tired of hearing people, all they have to offer is thoughts and prayers. In my faith, people say faith without works is dead. So we will find a way. But the reason we have a problem right now is we've let the corporate gun lobby frame this debate. It is time that we have bold actions and a bold agenda.
Over 90% of the American people think we have to get assault weapons off the street, period. And we have to get buybacks and get them out of their basements.
Everyone up here favors an assault weapon ban. Everyone up here favors magazine limitations, which, by the way, would have made a huge difference.
We can ban the weapons of war.
It's about ending the sales of assault weapons into our communities. Those weapons of war were designed to kill people as effectively and as efficiently as possible. They should belong on the battlefield and not in our communities.
But I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals.
By the way, you can't own the following weapons, period. They cannot be sold anymore.
Like, if you're going to take people's guns away, wait till you get elected, then take the guns away.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Well, we feel really good that we're one step closer to achieving one of the primary goals that the families had when they brought this litigation, which was to prevent Alex Jones from ever inflicting the kind of harm at scale that he had inflicted upon them.
We look forward to infesting your social media feeds with caricatures and grotesqueries of the very people who have ruined our media ecosystem over the last 10 years.
I am going to make a big announcement right now, and that might affect our relationship. And I am pledging myself to Satan and to the Prince of Darkness.
Oh, I read about this last night on a website.
After a decade of trying to shut us down and spending hundreds of millions of dollars to do it, believe they will be successful shutting us down Thursday night at midnight. But we're starting the Alex Jones Network. And the coordinates of the next phase of the info war is AlexJonesLive.com. So if you want to stand against the tyrants and against the censors and against the globalists and against their goal to shut us down, share that URL in your whole email list, your text message list, all over X, Facebook, TikTok, everywhere else. The coordinates of the next level, the next phase, the chapter in the fight against the tyrants is AlexJonesLive.com. And go to AlexJonesApp.com and download on Android or on Apple free the app for the new Alex Jones Live show that has audio and video feeds, the articles, special reports, and more. The tyrants are counting on you to not take this serious. They're counting on you to not take action. So take action now at AlexJonesLive.com and AlexJonesApp.com. The ball is in your court. Roll over and submit to tyranny or stand up and fight 1776 2.0. You're unstoppable. But I know this. The answer to 1984 is 1776. And if they were looking for a fight, they better believe they got one. make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra methylene blue. Blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. War Room Live, coming to you live this, Wednesday afternoon. Here from the off-site secret bunker headquarters of the Alex Jones Network. Very glad you're here with us today. We got a lot of stuff to cover. We'll be joined in the second hour by Brandon Weikert. He, of course, is a geopolitical analyst, and we'll be talking quite a bit about the Iran war. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about. In that regard, we have some developments with the negotiations. In fact, guys, just a few minutes ago, I sent in a video that's about 6 minutes long from Drop Site News. If y'all could get that, I'd like to go to it because it's sort of the latest in the negotiations and where they stand now. But essentially, we'll be covering three main topics today. We'll be talking about Iran. We'll be talking about the hantavirus and the cruise ship. And we'll be talking about... There's one other thing that we'll get to. Oh, the aliens. Oh, right. The aliens. Sorry. I almost forgot about the aliens. So it feels like we're in the crux here. We're at the intersection of all of these, frankly, psyops. Like, yeah, there's physical aspects to them, but for the main part, they serve as psychological operations. The physical parts are in service of the wider psychological operations. So the Iran war, the aliens, and the hantavirus, I guess is how you say it, feels like COVID on steroids. Feels like COVID-19 times three. Feels like they're like, we don't know which one, if one of these is sufficient, let's do all of them at once. We got the Iran war, shut down fertilizer, cause starvation, bring about the rationing, cause control that way. We got the aliens in case, you know, people are... That's too mundane. I don't know. Maybe it's too mundane just starving everybody by eliminating their fertilizer. Maybe we need some sort of sci-fi element to keep people's attention. And then the hantavirus, of course, just that's the sprinkle on the ice cream, right? That's just the little bit on top to go. And, you know, you'll die if you go outside. There's a lot of suspicious stuff about the hantavirus. It's funny, actually, seeing the way that, like, I mean, COVID, they really, I'm thinking now looking back, they're like, we probably should have gone harder with COVID. Like, I think they expected COVID to be so overwhelming. I mean, the vaccines they wanted to get in everybody. I think they knew there was going to be some resistance. I think they thought they could get over it. They thought they could overwhelm it. And while a lot of it was like the testing phase where they wanted to see, okay, what's people's reactions going to be? How do they respond to this type of input? I think it trained everybody to do the research and the investigation. I mean, there's this cruise ship that they say has hantavirus on it. And within 2 days, it's like you're scrolling down X and it's people like, here's who owns the cruise ship. Here's who their, spouses work for. Here's how they're even remotely involved in anything to do with biotechnology. Here's every person on the cruise ship. Here's where they went. Here's just a list of every new level 4 bioweapons lab created in the Southern Hemisphere in the last 24 months. Like, there is so much human intelligence activity going on investigating this stuff
they're not going to get away with much, I don't think. Now, then again, you know, they are getting away with things like what they did during COVID-19, although that also may be actually happening. We're just in this constant push-pull where the Trump administration, like, says it's going to do the right thing, and you, like, get excited, and then it doesn't really come through, or, you know, it wasn't what you expected exactly. And I see a lot of that going on. We've seen this for the last couple weeks where they realized, you know, about 3-4 weeks into the Iran war, it was going terribly. They weren't going to be able to get out of it and, you know, declare victory like they thought they were going to be able to. So, you know, they started going, well, we're going to do mass deportations, or we're going to do this, and we're going to, you know, oh, look, we just charged, you know, whoever. So we'll see. We'll see if just like the fact they have so much ground to make up. They're so far behind in the race right now in terms of, you know, public support that they really got to double down and actually do all of the stuff that we want. Whether they pull it off or not, I don't know. But you've got Tom Homan going out going, you haven't seen crap yet. The mass deportations are coming. And it's like, no, they're not, dude. I don't know what to tell you, but they're just not. They're not, because if you want the mass deportations, then you're going to get the ICE protest. If you get the ICE protest, you're going to have to fight them. You're going to have to crush them. You're going to have to send out troops to, you know, hold the line, and then you're going to get the bad press, and then you're going to lose the midterm. So you're not doing mass deportations. Stop. Just stop. I don't believe you. But the fact that they're saying that they are, you know, is evidence that they are at least aware of what they should be doing. The fact that they're not doing it is very concerning. However, when it comes to things like COVID-19, obviously they've arrested some of Anthony Fauci's underlings or charged them. And apparently we have until the 11th of this month to arrest Anthony Fauci for perjury before the statute of limitations runs up. But remember, the perjury was in service of the genocide. The perjury was in service of the mass murder that they were carrying out. I don't think there's a statute of limitations for murder. So, and again, it's like the perjury wasn't something small. It wasn't something off topic, you know, like they'll get, you know, Roger Stone or somebody on where they bring him in and ask him a ton of questions. And if he answers just one of them wrong, they send him to jail. That's the trap set up for, you know, patriots. But when you serve the establishment, you know, you got to really, really perjure yourself. And the way Anthony Fauci perjured himself was lying about the cover-up of the virus's origin and the creation of the virus and the fact that, I mean, really think about this. If any of it was real, if any of the, you know, COVID story was accurate, their behavior makes no sense at all. If you're really trying to contend with this mysterious novel virus, you don't know how, you know, where it came from, what it is, you have absolutely no incentive. You have absolutely no reason at all to cover up any information about it. The only reason you'd cover up information is if you already knew where it came from and you wanted to disguise that fact. And so as the world was reeling, as the economy was crashing, I mean, God only knows the damage that these lockdowns did, that all of this, and all of it was predicated on the lies that Anthony Fauci was perpetrating in the American media. The fear, the outrage, the tearing families apart. It was all predicated on this idea that half of us were telling the truth and the other half was lashing out at us because they believed Anthony Fauci. And all of this chaos and all of the misery and all of the death that occurred, it all could have been massively lessened. It all could have been significantly easier to contain if they had told the truth. If they had come out right away, and said, this came from a lab, we think it came from this lab, we're going to isolate the strain that is from this lab, we're going to find out everything about it, like, that's what you would have pursued if you were actually had any interest at all in actually combating a real virus. The fact that they covered it up is evidence of the whole thing being a fraud, the whole thing being a scam. So, it's one of these things where it's like when it's them, you know, the law, the letter of the law, the exact specific timetable is adhered to rigidly. And it's like, well, you know, like, you know, it's some sort of game or something where it's like, nope, that's the foul line and you cross the foul line and you get the, you know, you get the penalty. Absolutely. And then, you know, when it's them, it's, well, you know, 5 years, 10 years, who knows, who cares, whatever. The People versus Anthony Fauci, prosecuting him is our last chance for COVID justice. Time is running out to prosecute Dr. Anthony Fauci. After May 11th, Fauci, the man touted as America's doctor during the pandemic, who led the U.S. response, will be clear of the 5-year statute of limitations. Past that date, he can't be indicted over allegations he lied to Congress about the origins of COVID or the United States government's role in funding research that may have led to the pandemic. But again, it's like lying about funding the pandemic. He funded the pandemic. How are you going to charge him for lying about a thing if you don't know the truth? And if you know the truth about the thing, if you know that the truth is they created the virus, the lying about it is the smallest part of that. The creating and releasing the virus is the biggest part. And then the lie was in service of all of the responses. It's absolutely crimes against humanity. I mean, it might be the most applicable thing ever to come under that label, because this wasn't a crime against a portion of humans. It wasn't a crime against a nation that they call crimes against humanity. This was a crime against the body of humanity itself, against all of us. And really, it's a crime against nature and against God. They injected freaking zoo animals and wild deer with mRNA vaccines. I mean, it wasn't just humans. They blanketed the world in this experimental death jab. It is not just a, it's like the crime against humanity. It's the crime of the millennia, as far as I'm concerned. I believe we have a video of, I guess it's Robert F. Kennedy's son talking about this. I'm not sure, guys, if you can find that. Here it is, 39. Let's go to clip 39 here. Hopefully this is in English. Should be. This is Connor Kennedy talking about what the trial may look like when it comes to Anthony Fauci. Let's watch.
The auto pardons, the auto pen pardons, do you think that's something that will hold water? President Trump made that announcement that they're now null and void, so then Fauci can be arrested. Do you think he'll be arrested?
I think they're going to drag him in front of Congress and he's going to perjure himself, in which case hopefully he'll be arrested.
You could ask him one question on the stand. What would it be?
Well, I think he is such an egomaniac. He'll lie to save his own ego, to try to, you know, go down as the guy that people were selling the candles of and stuff like that. I would like to see the emails that, you know, obviously we got a trove of leaked emails from him. Part of those emails said, you know, if you have anything really crazy to send, put, you know, send it to my personal email. I would like to see what's on those emails. If I had to ask him one question, I would say, you know, why do you do gain-of-function research? Just why?
Right.
Give us, if he really had to answer the truth on that and say bioweapons out loud, that would be a violation of the Geneva Convention and, you know, off to a new Nuremberg-style trial with you and everybody else involved. Right.
So if I ask you that question, you're Dr. Fauci, could you answer? Let me ask you the question, though.
Yeah.
So I'm you, and I'm saying, why do you make bioweapons? No, why do you do gain-of-function?
Well, let me be perfectly clear. There was a biodefense boom in America. The Pentagon was throwing money at me. And what am I going to do? I need the money. I approve the grant.
That's what he would say?
Yeah, that's something like that.
That he was telling the truth. That's what he would say.
That was a great impression. That was very good. So you want a job? I think he goes to show on the Alex Jones Network. So that was Connor Kennedy, RFK Jr.'s son, really hinting at the truth. There should be Nuremberg trials for Anthony Fauci. If I had a chance to answer to question Anthony Fauci and demand an answer, it might be something like firing squad or noose. Your choice. Your choice, sir. We're going to give you a final choice in dictating the, you know, specificity of your ultimate judgment, but that's what you deserve. And it is. It is absolutely what all of these people deserve. And frankly, it's sort of an additional crime on top of all the other crimes that justice has not been served yet. but we have more. Let's go to clip 43 here. Clip 43. A new study confirms Fauci and the top officials used fake PCR case count to justify all of their crap, which, of course, we knew from the beginning and we're telling you the whole time and reported throughout the entirety of the COVID pandemic. But, yeah, it's good to acknowledge it once again. Let's watch.
All of a sudden now there's talk of Anthony Fauci being prosecuted as that may have been an auto pen pardon. This study looked at this German lab. You can think of it as the command center of Germany's PCR testing. So these researchers went and looked week by week the differences between PCR positive rates and antibody positivity rate. So antibody positivity, if you are positive, that means you were infected. With the PCR tests, they found that 86% of those who had a positive PCR reading, 86% did not have antibodies. So they weren't actually currently infected. So what this means is for only 14% in the early pandemic, only 14% of PCR positive cases represented true infections. So, I mean, that means that basically all of this stuff, all of these cases and, here in America, 14 days to slow the spread. And I know there were similar things in Europe. This was all based on a seemingly fraudulent metric. This should be on the front page news of every major news organization because the past 4 years, we went through the lockdowns. People's lives were shattered. They lost their jobs. They lost their livelihoods. And it was all based on now a verifiably highly flawed test that in which only 14% represented true infection. So there really should be a form of accountability. And, we have to start talking about this because this cannot happen again.
So, and that was from the McCullough Foundation. So it's understandable that at the time, in the midst of all of it, maybe you believed the crap they were selling you. Now, we saw through all of it. We were telling you this the entire time. They're kicking us off the internet for telling you the truth about all of this. But it's been 6 years. By now, it's all been admitted. It's all been studied. It's all been discovered. Every single aspect of COVID-19 was an outrageous lie spread by people who knew exactly what they were doing. And that's the thing you have to understand. The source of the virus was an absolute lie. It came from the lab in Wuhan. Everybody should have known that. The PCR tests that were used to show the spread being so virulent and dangerous, absolute lie. They just turn up the sensitivity and it'll have a positive basically 99.9% of the times. Even early on in the PCR test, people in Africa were testing Coke bottles and lizards and they were coming back positive. It was always fraudulent. The way that they kept people from knowing about it until it was too late to do anything about it, calling you a racist, that you hated Chinese people for pointing out the spread of the virus. Every single aspect, the masks, the lockdowns, the vaccines, obviously, every single aspect was a deliberate lie, and there's no excuse for believing any of it anymore. The only thing to do now is to, like any murder investigation, go back through, look at the evidence, and punish the murderers. The PCR tests were 86% false. And even those 14%, I would be surprised if they weren't just something like the flu. Remember when the flu disappeared for a year? Remember how they just ignored that just impossible reality? Remember how they sent people into nursing homes, even though it was elderly people and the infirm that would be the most likely to succumb to it? Remember how they held the Event 201 game plan right before the outbreak? I mean, none of this is even speculative. None of it's questionable whatsoever at this point. We absolutely know who did it, how they did it, and how they tried to cover it up. We have them dead to rights. Now we need them punished. Dead in reality after a court trial and the Nuremberg punishment. And again, that's just the normal reaction. How can more people not be, it's like, especially the people that fell for it. Again, that's the thing I don't understand. We didn't fall for any of it. I'm not mad that, you know, Anthony Fauci tricked me. I was never tricked. But for those of you that wore masks for years, that took the vaccine and probably have, you know, permanent physical damage to yourself because of it, the people that broke up with their families and ended long-term relationships, lost your jobs, these people did that to you. Where is your outrage? Where is your fury? Where is your righteous indignation that they took advantage of your vulnerability? They took advantage of the fear they created in you with a virus they created in a lab. Where is your fury for these people? Because we never fell for it. I never took the vaccine. I never wore the mask. I never stayed locked down. I worked like a dog for all of COVID-19, actually. My taxes paid for you to sit at home. Is that it? Do you feel some sort of guilt? Do you feel guilty because if you admit that it was all fake, then you'd have to admit that you went along with the evil, that you actually were in service of the scumbags? Is it your pride that stops you from recognizing what they did to you? It's just in a world that seems in a constant, desperate search for victimhood, you don't have to look that far. We've all been victimized by these people. And it's not about, oh, we're a victim, feel sorry for us. It's about justice. They victimized us. Now we should destroy them. That's how this works. But not if you just pretend it never happened and if you just block that out of your memory. Some sort of post-traumatic stress response, you weaklings. Let's go finally to clip 52 here. Again, the mass injection, the vaccine, probably the worst thing ever done to humanity, and just the scale. I mean, it really is biblical. I remember first reading when they were injecting wild deer and injecting zoo animals, and it just like, I just felt this like out of body. I like started to get dizzy. I'm just like, this is an attack against creation. This is the craziest thing that's ever happened. If this was in a movie, nobody would believe it. It would be a farce to have this, you know, virus spreading, and it's just like, they know exactly where it came from. They know exactly why it's spreading. They know exactly where it is. And they just hide it all and have the whole world just going insane, running out in the woods and injecting rabbits with, you know, mRNA vaccine. It's crazy what they did to us. They drove us all insane. Well, they drove you all insane. We're the sane ones here, just trying to keep the ship afloat. Let's watch clip 52. This is from the Truth Department.
The mass injecting of more than half the world's population with that drug is the worst thing that has ever happened in the history of our species. And it has happened now. Yeah. And I know that's very, very difficult for a lot of people to accept, particularly people who've had it. But we are now living in the aftermath of that. And the repercussions are going to go on, I'm afraid, for a very long time. It's not like, oh, people, lots of people died and now they've finished dying. And obviously we want justice. People will keep dying, keep being extremely ill, probably be infertile, affected in all kinds of different ways for years and years, I'm afraid. And people have to kind of accept that thing took place. And anybody who was involved at any kind of high level with making that happen is not your friend.
Not only is it imperative on us, in the sake of justice, in the name of our country, to punish these people. You know why you punish criminals first and foremost? So they don't do it again. Guess what? They're doing it again, folks. We'll cover it on the other side. Stay with us.
We've been right about the poison shots and raised the main alarm, and right about the open borders, and right about the wars, and right about the entire agenda. That's why the bad guys want us off air. And that's why it's such a revolutionary act when you take the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X, or on Rumble at AJN Live. That's the new site on Rumble. Hundreds of thousands followed just last day. I'm going to thank all you that did at AJN Live there. Follow us there. Get the free app for the Droid and for Apple for your phone at alexjonesapp.com. This is a revolutionary act. Share it on your email list, your text message list. Tell those you share it to share it. That creates the chain reaction. And then support us at thealexjonesstore.com. When you support us, we are absolutely unstoppable. Become a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com because you get $40 to spend in the store each month, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything on top of it. Cancel any time. Stand with us. All of our victories are shared together. It's because of you. Take action now. at realauctions.com and theauctionstore.com.
Well, we feel really good that we're one step closer to achieving one of the primary goals that the families had when they brought this litigation, which was to prevent Alex Jones from ever inflicting the kind of harm at scale that he had inflicted upon them.
We look forward to infesting your social media feeds with caricatures and grotesqueries of the very people who have ruined our media ecosystem over the last 10 years.
I am going to make a big announcement right now, and that might affect our relationship. And I am pledging myself to Satan and to the Prince of Darkness.
Oh, I read about this last night on a website.
After a decade of trying to shut us down and spending hundreds of millions of dollars to do it, believe they will be successful shutting us down Thursday night at midnight. But we're starting the Alex Jones Network. And the coordinates of the next phase of the InfoWar is alexjoneslive.com. So if you want to stand against the tyrants and against the censors and against the globalists and against their goal to shut us down, share that URL in your whole email list, your text message list, all over X, Facebook, TikTok, everywhere else. The coordinates of the next level, the next phase, the chapter in the fight against the tyrants is alexjoneslive.com. And go to alexjonesapp.com and download on Android or on Apple free the app for the new Alex Jones Live show that has audio and video feeds, the articles, special reports, and more. The tyrants are counting on you to not take this serious. They're counting on you to not take action. So take action now at alexjoneslive.com and alexjonesapp.com. The ball is in your court. Roll over and submit to tyranny or stand up and fight 1776 2.0. You're unstoppable. But I know this. The answer in 1984 is 1776, and if they were looking for a fight, they better believe they got one.
So much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to the alexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. However you're watching us, thank you for finding us. You know, one thing, once we get sort of settled in, we're still sort of, you know, we're in the first week here at the Alex Jones Network in the new offsite studios. So we're still sort of working out some of the kinks, figuring out how to make everything run smooth as butter. I think what I want to do is start incorporating more of like the chat into the show. I don't know how exactly we're going to do that, but I know we're up on Rumble now. Maybe we'll get the Rumble chat going. Maybe like highlight certain, maybe the crew can like highlight certain chat, bring them up on screen and we can answer them. But obviously here in the modern media landscape, interaction is, you know, the currency of the realm. And so however you're supporting us, the easiest way to do it is just click that share button, share the link, clip something out, whatever you can do to spread the word about us. And make sure people know where to find us at the Alex Jones Network, at AJ and Live, alexjoneslive.com. Get the app, of course. However you can spread news about where we are and how we're still in operation and still doing everything that we normally do, we thank you so much for your support in that way and in all ways. And, of course, the best way is the alexjonesstore.com. We have fantastic sales going on there all the time. And, of course, it's the way that we get funding. It's the way that we've been able to build this backup studio. It's the way that we are fundraising to our next level and the next stage of the operation. So support us in this and support yourself with the products at thealexjonesstore.com. I told you yesterday, I'm still feeling it today, man. You take these supplements, and if you take them regularly to the point where you do it unconsciously, like at the old studio, there was just a place where all the items were, and I would just, without thinking about it, be taking them, and you get used to it, and then you think like, oh yeah, I'm always healthy and energized and feeling good, and then you stop taking them, and you're like, why is everything gray? why is everything so heavy? And it's like, oh right, I'm not taking the supplements. If you take the supplements, I mean, it might be subtle, but then you stop taking them and you're like, whoa, that was actually really intense. So really, like, once you acclimate yourself to them, you realize how powerful they are and how good they are, and how much you miss them when they're gone. So get yours today and set yourself up on this journey and just feel better than you've ever felt before. That's really what's going to happen when you improve your life with the supplements, with exercise, with just, you know, not letting all this bad news bear you down. And there's a chemical element to that. You know, that's why they manipulate your chemicals. Like, this is a very real thing. And it's like your body goes through phases as you go through life that alters your chemical balance, that changes the way you interpret the world. It's why, like, it's so easy to fall in love with your high school girlfriend, because your chemicals firing in your brain. It's like, that's the time throughout evolution that you were supposed to be pair bonding. And so, like, it literally is easier to fall in love. Like, you feel stronger about your girlfriend in high school than you probably will ever feel about anybody, because the chemicals are firing like that. Or you can watch a movie, and if you're with a bunch of friends and you're all like feeling good, it's going to be the funniest thing you've ever seen. Your sides are hurting from laughing. Then you watch it again later in a different mood and you're like, why did I ever think this was funny? It's the same thing. You're getting the same information input, only we're not like computers. We don't just like input in, output out, and it's always the same. It changes depending on your chemical balance at the time. And so if they can alter your chemical balance to where just like it's the filter through which you see the world. So, you know, an event of InfoWars going down and being taken down under one chemical, you know, construct, it's sad, it's depressing, it's horrible, it's awful. Just alter those chemicals a little bit. And your testosterone, you know, up your testosterone a little bit. And it's like, okay, now we have a fight. Now we got something to sink our teeth into. Now we got a goal to reach for. Now we're fired up. So, like, really keeping your body as healthy as possible is, like, directly correlated to how you're able to handle and parse this information and how you perceive any of it. So you've got to make sure to keep this, you know, the mind body balance, in your thoughts as you, you know, and I do it too, where I'm like, I'm sure everybody does, where you're just in a bad mood and there's like something small just ticks you off. I don't even have to do it with like my family or my wife, where it's like, look, it's not that thing that's pissing me off. I'm mad about something else. I'm just mad in general. I'm just off right now. And so it's not that little thing that really pissed me off, but because I'm already in this mood and that little thing just puts you over the top. Like, I don't know. You gotta be conscious of that stuff and go, look, I'm just mad because I'm hungry. You know, like if you can't recognize that, then you're going to blame your anger on something else and get mad at that. Anyway, you just got to be conscious of this stuff. And I feel like we got a lot of people walking around there who walking around this country who just have no connection to their body, no connection to the, like, really chemical / spiritual landscape that they're operating in. But this has always been part and parcel with the InfoWars and Alex Jones' message, the philosophy and ideology that we represent. It's like all of this stuff is tied in together. There is no distinction between the natural, the supernatural, the digital, and the spiritual. We're all in one big quagmire here. And you can't affect one thing without massively affecting the others. So we give you amazing ways to fight back against the chemical poisons of the world around you, which don't just lower your health, but lower your ability to contend with reality in a very real way. You can fight back against this with the Modern World Survival Pack. It's your daily survival pack, Shilajit capsules, Atomic Defense, and the CMOS capsules, packed with minerals to support overall wellness, thyroid health, and immune function. Of course, Atomic Defense is your daily defense and cellular support supplement, and the Shilajit gummies support natural energy, stamina, and daily vitality. You can also get some other stacks sort of the collections of supplements that all work in tandem with each other and sort of are better than the sum of their parts. The gut and detox defense stack has zeolite detox and defense to support your body's natural detox pathways, T3 trifecta iodine to support thyroid function, metabolism, energy, and hormone balance, and then bovine colostrum plus to support gut health, immune defense, nutrient absorption, and recovery. And you're getting these for like massive discount. All of these packs are under $100. The Modern World Survival Pack is under $90 when they would regularly sell out at over $150. So make sure you're stocking up now. We've got more stacks to tell you about later in the show, but let's get back to the news right now. So obviously, I see a sort of, maybe it's coincidental, maybe not, but the fact that right now Anthony Fauci is fast approaching the date upon which he apparently will be able to get away with lying about the mass murder he committed. That's kind of weird, but that's May 11th. And at exactly the same time, there's an alleged outbreak of hantavirus, I think I'm pronouncing that right, on a cruise ship that doesn't look like a cruise ship, which is kind of weird. The cruise ship is like no cruise ship I've ever seen. It looks like a scientific vessel, to be honest with you. I don't see any slides, don't see any diving boards or swimming pools. I don't see any thing that would hint that it's a typical cruise ship. Now, the fact that it was a cruise ship to Antarctica might also be another reason why conspiracy theorists have their ears pricked up, because anything having to do with Antarctica is immediately suspicious to me, because only suspicious things go on down there. And if you weren't, like, I heard about the hantavirus thing. There have been a bunch of little scares like this since COVID, right? There will be a little outbreak of whatever it is, the Nipah virus or, you know, this little thing over there. And every time it's people going, oh, here we go again, COVID again. They're doing it again. And I'm not mocking that, by the way. I think that's an appropriate reaction to have when your world has been attacked by a, you know, genocidal elite using engineered bioweapons to try to kill everybody and then force us all in an experimental vaccine. Like, I understand why every single little outbreak of some new disease causes us aware people to get, you know, hyper concerned. And so when the first sort of stories about, oh, hantavirus on a cruise ship, I'll sort of keep an eye on it and, you know, going, okay, this could be another false alarm. It could be something real. And you see the pictures of the ship and you go, it doesn't look like a cruise ship to me. And then you see basically the only video that's come out about it so far from one of the people on the ship. And I mean, I watched it for 10 seconds and it was like, what the hell is this? It maybe it's totally real. Maybe the guy's totally legitimate. Maybe he's being totally honest, but it is so bizarre the way this guy is talking. I don't know. It's one of these things where it's like, I wasn't really that concerned until I saw this video. And then I'm like, okay, this is something. And now, like I said, something like this breaks. You've got all hands on deck. You've got this enormous human intelligence network on X and all over the internet diving in and investigating it. And what they found is that there is a lot of smoke here. May not be a fire, but we've got an event very similar to Event 201 having just taken place. We've got new bioweapon labs created in Argentina in October of 2025 that handled this virus in particular. Like, I'll go over all of this, but let's begin with that video from the cruise ship. This is 37, and this guy seems like he is reading from a script, and there's just something so fraudulent about this video, in my opinion. I just am not buying it. I'm just not buying it. But let's watch, and you judge it for yourself. Here it is.
I normally wouldn't make a video like this, but I feel like I need to say something, so I wrote a few things down. I am currently on board the MV Hondius, and what's happening right now is very real for all of us here. We're not just a story. We're not just headlines. We're people. People with families, with lives, with people waiting for us at home. There's a lot of uncertainty, and that's the hardest part. All we want right now is to feel safe, to have clarity, and to get home. So if you're seeing coverage about this, just remember that there are real people behind it, and that this isn't something happening somewhere far away. It's happening to us right now. I'll share more when I can, but for now, I just ask for your kindness and understanding. Thank you.
So to me, the thing about that is like, what? I don't know how to explain. It's just like, what is he even talking about? What I mean to say is that it's not anything like in particular about it. It's just like, imagine how you would think a video about this would go versus how that was. Like, what is he even talking about? This isn't just a story where real human beings like, yeah, we know. What? He's acting like he's being victimized by people talking about this. Dude, like, what, why though? Like, the way I would expect somebody on the ship to do would be like, hey, you know, I'm on the ship. There's this virus. I'm fine. I think it should be fine. This is really a pain in the butt. I was supposed to be home. The cruise was great up until, you know, people started dying. Like, it sucks. But he's just like, you know, we're real people. And it's like, yeah, we know you're real people. We know that you're human beings. Why do you feel the need to tell us that? Like, I just don't get it. You've got this ship in the middle of the ocean. It's got virus on it. You've got news reports in America going, hey, there's this rare disease that seems like it might be spreading between people, but there's people infected on this ship. People are like, oh, wow. Like, are they okay? What's going on? Showing interest. It's not like immediately people were just like, well, they deserve it for being on a cruise. Like, if that was the response, then I could understand people going, what the hell? We're just people. We're just people trying to live our lives. Like, okay, yeah, if that was the response. But he's like complaining about being dehumanized because people are interested in the story of the virus on the ship. It just makes no sense. It's just disconnected with reality. It is a truly bizarre video to post when so far everybody's just like, uh-oh, looks like there's a virus. Hope everybody's okay. And you're going to make a video being like, but we're human beings. It's like, yeah, we know. That's why we're concerned about you. What are you talking about? Truly crazy. I mean, truly inexplicable what the point of that video was, who he was talking to, why he seems like an emotional wreck about this. What? So I'm not the only one that got very weird feelings about this video that just makes no sense. This is somebody named Dre, who actually, I think we played a video of hers recently. Maybe I didn't play the video, but she's been doing a lot of good research about the underground IT bunker that they're building underneath the ballroom. But she apparently is a big fan of cruise ship TikTok, which is a whole subgenre of TikToks, people on cruise ships, people who work on cruise ships, who are influencers and just document sort of the chaos that goes on there. So here is TikTok user Dre, clip 38, talking about her reaction to seeing that video and simply not believing it. Let's watch.
Now, something is off about this cruise ship in the Atlantic with the hantavirus outbreak, and I cannot let it go. This is the MV Hondius, an expedition cruise ship owned and operated by Oceanwide Expeditions. And the route went from Argentina through Antarctica and the South Atlantic, with stops in South Georgia and Tristan da Cunha and St. Helena, all before heading towards Cape Verde. And I'm sorry, how is it that there are 147 people on board, with 3 people dead, 7 confirmed cases of the hantavirus, and the only video we've all seen from inside the ship is one guy named Jake crying in his cabin? No, I'm sorry. I'm not buying it, okay? Because you're talking to somebody who watches a lot of cruise ship drama on TikTok. In fact, it is one of my favorite TikTok subgenres that exists, okay? I watch it all the time. And if there's one thing that I've learned from those TikTokers, it is that if someone so much as catches a stomach flu on a Carnival cruise, there are 19 TikToks, 4 Facebook Lives, and some woman named Brenda locked in a closet filming herself saying, please help us, like it's the frickin' Blair Witch Project. So I decided to investigate. Not a full rabbit hole, because I have other investigations that require my attention right now, but what I did find was interesting. So first I went looking for the original Jake video because, like many of you, the first time I saw it was on the CBS TikTok account, which is a company owned by Larry Ellison now, but I digress. I couldn't find the original video anywhere, but luckily CBS did put in the tippy-top corner of the video Jake's username on TikTok, so I went to his page to see if I could find it there. No. So I started scrolling through Jake's page, and I learned that he is a Boston travel content creator, and he's been to, like, hundreds of countries, although none of his videos have gotten, like, a super high amount of views, but yet he's got 5.6 million. I just know that. That's weird. Anyways, he's got sponsorship links. He's got collaborations. He's got a Yahoo email. And if you go over to TikTok shop, he's hawking a bunch of, you know, travel consumerism junk. And I'm scrolling through his posts, and he's got this weird PR statement as one of them. Mind you, he didn't even post the video that he sent to CBS on his own account, remember? So, I don't know, it's weird. But then I hit this penguin video from the trip, and it's a stunning video with a high-resolution camera, and, I mean, look, the sky is insane. It's clearly very beautiful. But just keep in mind what this sky looks like, okay? Because it's gonna come back later. In fact, his photos and videos are so beautiful, it is kind of hard to believe that it's not AI. No, but Michael.Elizabeth08, I'm with you. So I went to Google and searched for the name of the ship, the MV Hondius, filtered the dates to be before the outbreak became public, and went to videos to see if I'd missed anything, because this is the exact kind of trip where you would normally see people posting pictures of wildlife or videos of the sunset or rough seas with the yo-ho sound, cabin tours, meals, anything. The only videos are from Jake Rosmarian. This is weird! And then I read about one other passenger who was quoted in BBC and AP coverage named Kazem Hato, also known online as Ibn Hatuta. Sorry if I mispronounced that. This guy. And he sent over footage over WhatsApp to AP News and BBC, and he gave them quotes specifically saying, "Actually, morale is high. People are watching movies, reading, and drinking hot drinks." Three people are dead. And then it gets even weirder because he's posting stuff like this on his story. You can pause to read it, but the second paragraph says, "This whole situation has been blown out of proportion partly because of one person panicking on the ship whose video has been circulating on the media. While his reaction is valid, it doesn't represent the situation on board. Everyone else, 148 out of 149, has been calm. The situation is under control, and we just wish those who are sick a speedy recovery." And his videos also look cinematic, except if you'll notice, his sky is blue. His video clips around a lot, but from every which angle, it's the same blue sky. You mean to tell me that both of these content creators were there during sunset and Jake's the only one that got a video with the beautiful pink orange sky? Mm-mm-mm. Fools, they think we're fools. I mean, come on, you expect us to believe that after the outbreak happens and people are locked in their rooms forced to quarantine, and the only two passengers from inside the ship we hear from are two travel influencers? Nope, absolutely not. As a dedicated consumer of cruise drama TikTok, I reject this whole premise. Look, maybe the cruise company told them they weren't allowed to post, maybe the Wi-Fi is bad, or maybe everybody on that cruise ship just genuinely has great self-control, in which case, good for them. But I'm just saying, the silence to severity ratio is weird.
Silence to severity ratio. I think that's a good way to put it. Again, I don't blame anybody for being very suspicious of the story that we're currently being told. Especially, and this is sort of a flashback to one of the other events that seemed like it was going to be the next big COVID outbreak. Y'all remember monkeypox? I think it was monkeypox, right? That there was a big monkeypox outbreak after a giant gay orgy on an island off of Spain. There's like a Canary Island, I don't know, electronica gay orgy event, and monkeypox spread there. I remember at the time going, all right, well, this is an easy fix. You know, it's an island. You know everybody on the island. It's not that many people. There's like 3,000 people. You can quarantine every single one of them, isolate them. You could stop that spread in an instant. How much easier is it with a cruise ship? If you've got an outbreak on a cruise ship, that's like ideal. You just, it's a plague ship. This is like the oldest thing in sailing. It's like you park them off the harbor, you make them wait for a couple weeks. If they're all alive at the end, they get to, you know, come on shore. Yeah, monkeypox outbreaks likely spread from sex at two raves in Europe, says WHO expert. And then it went away pretty quickly because they realized that it only affected gay men, and except for dogs and children that live near gay men, and then got embarrassing and just sort of went away. But the point was that, like, if they wanted to stop the outbreak, it would not have been that hard. If your choices are between, like, potentially allow another worldwide pandemic and all of the death and destruction that comes about from that, or just like deprive 3,000 people of their civil liberties for a week or two so you can guarantee they aren't infected and aren't going to spread the plague. It's a very easy choice to make, but for some reason it's like, yeah, there's this outbreak on this island and then everybody went home to every country around the world. And it's like, why did you let them go home? What the hell? Now it's on a cruise ship and it's like, okay, you park the cruise ship off the shore. You send in heavily fortified teams covered in the PPE material and, you know, aren't going to spread the infection. You keep them there. You treat them on the ship. And until everybody's either dead or cured, it just stays there. Shouldn't be that hard. And so when you look at the way the WHO handled COVID-19 and the way they're handling the hantavirus on this cruise ship, it's like it has to be deliberate that they want this to spread, because you don't have an outbreak on a cruise ship that spreads beyond the cruise ship without doing it on purpose. Right? I mean, that's obvious, right? But now, apparently, according to the New York Times, from Unusual Whales on X, 23 hantavirus cruise passengers returned home to all corners of the world, including to the U.S., and one of them is already sick. So now everybody on every plane with them, everybody who's come in contact with them, the hospitals that they are now, like, they could all be exposed. This is the type of thing, and I remember saying it early on in COVID as well. It's like, and it's in the skits I did about COVID, where it's like, oh, don't worry about it. The WHO is funded with billions and billions of dollars. All they do every day, all day, is try to study emergent viruses, identify emergent viruses, and come up with plans to deal with emergent viruses. And in the skit, I go, oh, okay, so they've got this under control. Nope, they're not going to do anything for months until it spreads all over the world and can't be stopped. And then they'll step in and tell you to wear a mask and stay home. Yeah, that's insane. If we have the WHO, and it still exists despite, you know, being defunded by America, but like, what were we funding anyway? How do you not, at the bare minimum, come up with some sort of plan of action that if there's a new virus that comes out, how do we isolate and silo it? It's like, where are any of these? And you don't need a World Health Organization to do this either. You need basic common sense. But they don't do it, even though they're funded by billions of dollars and have all of the resources they could ever possibly need to contain and manage something like this. They don't, for some reason. Gee, I wonder why that is. Oh, and by the way, Exercise Polaris was held in April of this year, practicing for the next WHO major disease outbreak. So we have our Event 201. It was the Polaris Initiative. And we'll look up that. We're going to be joined by Brandon Weikert. On the other side, we're going to talk about the war in Iran. We're going to start with a report from Dropside News. Stay with us, folks.
We've been right about the poison shots and raise the main alarm. And right about the open borders and right about the wars and right about the entire agenda. That's why the bad guys want us off air. And that's why it's such a revolutionary act when you take the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X or on Rumble at AJN Live. That's the new site on Rumble. Hundreds of thousands followed just last day. I'm going to thank all you that did at AJN Live there. Follow us there. Get the free app for the Droid and for Apple for your phone at alexjonesapp.com. This is a revolutionary act. Share it on your email list, your text message list. Tell those you share it to share it. That creates the chain reaction. And then support us at thealexjonesstore.com. But the sister site of the owner of the Alex Jones Network, Bigly, is realalexjones.com. And they hold back 10% of the knives and the coins and the t-shirts that are limited edition there. A lot of the stuff that you'll find that's sold out at thealexjonesstore.com is available at realalexjones.com, like the modern, updated World War II trench knife with the blacked out, murdered out brass knuckles, the skull crusher, 10-inch double-edged dagger, 5 different limited edition laser engraved designs. They're all about to sell out. Only a few hundred left at realalexjones.com. So take advantage of that. Support us. The ultramethylene blue, the bovine colostrum, the Shilajit, all the very best supplements you're going to find are at realalexjones.com. When you support us, we are absolutely unstoppable. But whatever you do, become a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com, because you get $40 to spend in the store each month, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything on top of it. and you can cancel any time. There's no commitment, just in your profile. You pay $30 a month, you get $40 to spend instantly, and the special deals, special deals, special offers, cancel any time. Stand with us. We've got so much more work to do. All of our victories are shared together. It's because of you. Take action now at realauctionshows.com and theauctionstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I mean, obviously, there's a intense flurry of diplomatic activity happening. And in the media outlets that are preferred by the Trump administration, like Axios, they're really pushing this idea that the U.S. and Iran are on the verge of signing a one-page memorandum of understanding that wouldn't be a comprehensive deal, but that would stop the acute phase of the war and then provide a framework for a range of negotiations, beginning with an opening of the strait, some form of a non-aggression agreement that Iran would want to apply to all of its regional allies. But this is the U.S. version of the story, and there's sort of a pattern that we're watching unfold here, which is that the U.S. and Iran have been indirectly negotiating primarily through the mediator country of Pakistan. And what they've been doing is exchanging amendments to a 14-point framework that they've been discussing. And what happens is that when the Iranians submit their amendments to it, Donald Trump begins posting things on Truth Social, and then leaks begin to Axios and other news outlets, and they try to create a momentum that is intended on putting pressure on Iran and making it look like the U.S. is being reasonable, Iran is being obstructionist. In reality, the U.S. consistently injects into this framework maximalist demands. Trump has claimed that he wants to get an unconditional surrender of Iran. When the Iranians respond to Trump, they denounce the Iranians. And then Trump goes online and he threatens to bomb their civilization or to carry out another bombing campaign that's going to be more intense than the last one, which was the case of what he did on Wednesday morning after these reports started that there was going to be some kind of a deal. You know, I talk a lot to Iranian sources, including Iranian officials. And the top line that I think is important to emphasize from the Iranian perspective is that they are very quick to remind anyone that twice in a single year, the United States claimed to be negotiating with Iran only to turn around and conduct massive bombing of Iran, even when there was another round of negotiations scheduled on the books. That happened in June of 2025 when the U.S. and Israel initiated the so-called 12-day war. And it started on February 28th when the U.S. and Israel launched a massive bombing campaign against Iran that went on for many weeks. The wild card here that the Trump administration seems to have genuinely been taken aback by and shocked by is that Iran didn't fold. Iran didn't capitulate. So the status right now is part of a pattern where the U.S., because Trump is desperate for an off-ramp, is trying to force through a deal. What we don't know is what concessions the Iranians might be willing to make. It's clear that the Trump administration already is making concessions. They announced this as a regime change war. They said they want unconditional surrender. That hasn't happened. And the Iranians have shown that that is not going to happen. So where things stand right now is it's highly possible that Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu are going to resume the bombing of Iran, that they may do another round of assassinations of Iranian leaders. That's always a possibility. It's also possible that we're heading toward a deal that Trump is going to try to spin as a victory, as though he should be praised for putting out small portions of the massive, intense fires that he himself started. And so what we're looking at right now is a situation where the Iranians say that they are fully engaged in the diplomatic track, that they are doing indirect negotiations. They say they won't do direct talks until the United States formally lifts the blockade on the Strait of Hormuz. They are sending amendments back and forth with the United States, but they say that they have their own red lines. They want any ceasefire or non-aggression pact to apply to all regional allies. Israel is engaged in massive bombing of southern Lebanon right now. It continues to engage in intense ground operations. Hezbollah, which the Israelis claimed was basically wiped out, has been ferociously fighting back Israeli attempts to conquer or take more of Lebanese territory.
All right, so that's a little update from about 2 hours ago from Drop Site News about the latest in the negotiations with Iran. I got to be honest, I don't know what to make, how to make heads or tails of this. You got Rubio, Marco Rubio, giving this long press conference a couple days ago about the attacks on Iran, but it's like everything is topsy-turvy. You hear completely different messaging from the same people within 24 hours. So luckily, we're going to be joined in the next segment by Brandon Weikert. He's going to help us hopefully make sense of the nonsense of the Iran war and where it goes from here and what possible off-ramps could still be taken to try to minimize the already significant damage to the world. Stay with us. It's the War Room Live on Alex Jones Network. We'll be right back.
We've been right about the poison shots and raised the main alarm, and right about the open borders, and right about the wars, and right about the entire agenda. That's why the bad guys want us off air. And that's why it's such a revolutionary act when you take the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X or on Rumble at AJN Live. Get the free app for your phone at alexjonesapp.com. When you support us, we are absolutely unstoppable. All of our victories are shared together. It's because of you. Take action now at realalexjones.com and thealexjonesstore.com. Do you think I'm going to sell you something that doesn't really work? I always ask people, they never know the answer, even salesmen. I go, who's the best salesman? The best salesman, a smart salesman, goes and finds what is the hottest, best product that's in demand. It sells itself. I promote freedom. I promote liberty. You are insane if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, the very best out there. You're insane if you don't get our methylene red. You're crazy if you don't do bovine colostrum. You're crazy if you don't take these products. They really work and they fund the operation.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to talk about the Iran war this hour. I'm very happy to be joined by my guest, Brandon Weikert. He's a geopolitical analyst and the author of Winning Space, How America Remains a Superpower, as well as a number of other incredible books. He also manages the Weikert Report, World News Done Right. You can follow him on X at WeTheBrandon and WeikertReport.com. And, of course, he's been a regular fixture on alternative right-wing media since, for a while, but certainly since the Iran war began, providing really unparalleled analysis of what's going on in Iran. And I haven't found a single, I've been watching you this whole time, and I haven't found a single thing that you've been wrong about or disagreed with you about. You might be the only person in America I feel that way about. So, you know,
well,
so thank you.
You're very kind.
Well,
yes, I've taken a lot of incoming and I will continue to, I'm sure, but the truth must be spoken.
Yeah, and it seems hard to grasp at this point. What is the truth? Where are we? Well, what's going on? I mean, I try to keep up with this stuff. I think I get a handle on it. And then there's some announcement from Marco Rubio that contradicts Donald Trump, yeah, or from Iran that contradicts America. And it's like, at a certain point, I kind of throw my hands up and go, Brandon will figure it out and he'll tell me what's going on. So what is going on? What's the latest with Iran? How's the war going, man?
Well, the war is going about as well as the last time you and I spoke, which is we're very proficient at blowing things up and, harassing the Iranians, and they are very proficient at doing the same to us. So in essence, it's kind of a stalemate, but the longer the war goes on, as I told you before, the more it favors Iran because, frankly, they're not as exposed to the global, instability of prices related to shortages in the oil and natural gas market, the helium market, et cetera, et cetera. They are one of the most sanctioned countries in the world. So they can kind of sit down and wait for us to lose our momentum, which we are, as long as they hold out and survive, which they will, they win by default. And this is something that the president and his team clearly did not understand when they got into it. And it's interesting you brought up all the different sort of narratives coming out of the same administration. I mean, sometimes the president himself is negating something he just said an hour earlier in the day.
Right.
Part of me thinks that's by design, just to make everybody's so confused and tired, they just stop asking questions and kind of go with the flow. But then part of me thinks that it shows you how unprepared for this conflict the administration was. And it is my contention that not only are they desperately looking for a way out, but they're trying to find a way out that allows the administration to look like they still have the upper hand, which is why I believe hostilities are getting ready to commence again, irrespective of what what's going on with these talks in Pakistan or through Pakistan. I think that's all a feint. We've seen this before where the administration uses diplomacy as a feint to basically buy time until they're ready to strike again.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that you've got all of these signals coming at once, right? You've got, you know, movement of troops towards the Middle East. You've got a lot of signals. If you're paying attention, it's like, oh, it looks like we're getting ready for a big attack. And then you read headlines. It's like, oh, Trump is asking his military advisors about declaring victory and walking away. Now, obviously, I tend to go from more of the what's physically happening on the ground, not what are they spreading in right. the media. But still, it's just this disconnection, this total, I don't know, the rootlessness. I don't know what to call it because there's just nothing to sink your teeth into and go, okay, here's what's happening. However, there has been some things, have been some things revealed recently that you were right about on my show and I was right about saying, I think the damage that Iran has done to American bases is greater than they're telling us. Yeah. And that has now been revealed. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so basically you and I were sort of at the forefront of declaring that, and at least in my case, I got a lot of hate mail, a lot of threats online from these weird bot accounts, which clearly are connected to the U.S. government, you know, harassment campaign for about 3 weeks I was subjected to online. Basically, though, the U.S. military has spent many decades – hundreds of billions of dollars building up a handful of very key forward deployed bases throughout the Middle East. And in about 72 hours of the war having begun, the Iranians effectively destroyed or significantly damaged those bases to the point that they are no longer able to be used. That we basically have spent all this money and time building those facilities up over decades, and they were basically erased from being used, being effective in about 3 days. And that indicates, or that should indicate to your audience, how significant the Iranian missile, the ballistic missile threat was. In fact, the Iranian ballistic missile threat is so significant that the U.S. intelligence community in the last week or so has had to publicly admit and change the declarations of Secretary of Defense or War, Pollyanna Pete Hegseth. Originally, he said we had gotten 70% to 80% of their missile launchers and we had destroyed most of their underground missile cities. Now the intelligence community is coming out and saying, no, we got maybe 50% at best. Of those missiles. So the Iranians, and they're still churning these things out in the underground missile cities. So the Iranians are still combat effective, and they are very combat effective to the point that they have denied us use of several key bases, including the all-important U.S. Navy headquarters for the Fifth Fleet in Bahrain, which has basically been wiped off the face of the earth. And you've got U.S. naval personnel having to take shelter in the Hilton, being targeted there because, of course, the locals are saying, hey, the Americans are in the Hilton. Take it right. out, Iran, because most of the people in Bahrain are Shiite Muslims, which is the majority religion in Iran. So anyway, it is a complete degradation of the U.S. strategic position in the region. And it will end, I think, with the local governments not, or most of those local governments, the Arab states, not having us come back in a meaningful way to rebuild those bases. Because clearly it makes them more of a target than it does protect them.
Yeah. And this is kind of the thing. And we'll get into it now. I sort of wanted to start with the details and expand out. But let's just expand out right now because, and we'll talk about the ceasefire and we'll talk about, you know, the shortages and starvation mm-hmm. and stuff. But it seems to me like what is happening with the war in Iran is going to fundamentally change the world and the way America interacts with the world. It yeah. seems like it's been revealed now that there's always this idea of all of these bases we have over the world are necessary for national security. And what is being revealed through the war with Iran is these bases are a liability for us. They really don't help. They're not capable of, you know, projecting power in the way that we said. Obviously, you've got the Gulf countries going, we thought this was an agreement. We gave you things. You gave us security. You can't give us security. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to rearrange, like, it really is going to destroy the world order as it exists now, right? And may cause the military to rethink this whole idea of having 1,000 bases everywhere in the world. I mean, can you talk about that? Just sort of the large scale future changes this is going to bring about in just like geopolitical calculus.
Well, undoubtedly, it's more evidence of that, which I've been saying for over, you know, many, almost a decade now, that the U.S. unipolar post-Cold War order is over. It was dying 10 years ago. It's dead now. It's sort of a zombie empire now that we've got here. But eventually the zombie will be put down. And it's that's happening in the Middle East. So even if somehow Trump was able to, you know, reopen the Strait of Hormuz tomorrow, even if suddenly the regime in Iran were to go away, the fact of the matter is that those bases, those key areas for us, have been denied to us. And given the economic and political fallout that's still yet to happen in the Arab states that hosted those bases, the probability that we will be asked to come back in the same capacity that we were there before the war is very low. In fact, if as the war continues, as the shortages continue, particularly in the Middle East, in those Arab states, I believe that at least a handful, maybe one or two at least, of those Arab states will be, those governments, those pro-American governments, will be overthrown by at least American skeptical governments, which will not want to see us come back. And what you're seeing, Harrison, you're right to point this out. We now have viable proof that the presence of U.S. bases in all of these territories is not a deterrence. It is a compellent toward war.
Right.
It's the fuel on the fire that is war. And for a very long time, U.S. policymakers in D.C. have sold themselves and the American people on this notion that we need those bases because they prevent, they keep, you know, small wars from becoming large wars. And what we're finding is just the opposite now. So my hope is that the silver lining, Harrison, in this is that the troops will come home now. There's no choice because there's nowhere for them to stay anymore. And so hopefully we can reorient and kind of come back home and rebuild ourselves. But the pathway there is going to be very long and hard and humiliating now. This is a humiliation of Uncle Sam and a really bad moment in our history.
Well, but as you point out, I mean, it's like, okay, if we learn the lesson from this that all these bases are just draining our resource and not actually providing security – like you said, I mean, this is what we've wanted. And I think we even joked about it early on in the Iran war of going, hey, Trump could, you know, say, okay, you know, we're done. We're withdrawing from the Middle East and, you know, actually sort of most effectively get out of the Middle East by just leaving the trash behind. It's
this
like,
this could be, yes,
that'd be great.
This
that'd
could be
great.
Very big for us. Yeah, you know, it could. It's just unfortunate that, you know, how you, I've been saying this for a while, it's just like Afghanistan. I wanted us out of Afghanistan for years, but how you get out is very important because you don't want to be seen as being thrown out and the locals, you know, pelting your rear end with, you know, tomatoes on the way out. This is not a way to exit anything. But that's what's happening in the Middle East. So that what that image will do will to basically empower American rivals globally who will then say, not only is Uncle Sam leaving and down and out, but this is clear that he's now a, you know, effectively a useless entity and we are now going to rise to replace him. Which again, I, you know, that's going to happen anyway, but it just the way it's happening is very unfortunate. This is entirely a disaster of our own making in the Middle East. None of this was necessary.
Absolutely. And now, you know, with almost supreme comedy, Marco Rubio is out there giving speeches where he says the goal of this war is to basically correct the problems that were created by this war. I mean, I think humiliation's already been achieved. Like, at this point, it's like, it's just piling on. It's, we've already been humiliated. Am I right? I mean, trying to put a good face on this, but like, I don't think anybody's buying it.
Well, and anytime they try to put a good face on it, because they can't read, they're, none of them are reading from the same song sheet.
Right.
They're all saying different things. So it's actually just creating a bigger humiliation exercise or ritual for us to endure. This to me is a lot, you know, Alex, I think Alex Jones talks a lot about the, what is it, the problem, reaction, solution cycle.
Yep.
This is sort of like that where the problem of the Strait of Hormuz, it's entirely of our own making. February 28th is when this all started. So Trump created the problem and now he's going to try to resolve it by reopening the strait, which I think is, it is darkly comedic. It's just unfortunate that we have so many of our people in harm's way, because of this.
Yeah. Maybe it's not funny, but it's certainly ironic. It's certainly, you know,
it's
not what you would expect from a superpower like us and all of the strength that we, you know,
and I don't
think
we can even call ourselves a superpower anymore. And then that was the subtitle of my first book. And I've often joked I need to change it now because clearly America is a superpower no more.
That's the question. Now people are saying Iran has proven it's a superpower. I mean, it can stand up and go toe to toe. I mean,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's for sure. And that's part of the rejiggering of the global, environment, which is leading to, I mean, right now we've gone from a unipolar world system dominated by the U.S. unquestionably to, a unstable tripolar system of the U.S., Russia, and China. And it's clearly trending now toward a truly multipolar system in which the United States will be one of many great powers. And I would argue, unless we do something significant to change things here at home, which I don't think will happen, we are a declining power of all those great powers. And this is not a good position to be in if you're the United States.
Well, and especially if you're a fan of the, you know, United States, imperial strategy. And I was just scrolling because I wanted to give credit to, Josiah Lippincott. He posted a great, podcast where he's talking. And so I'm sort of stealing his ideas. So I want to give him credit because I just watched his video last night and it was so brilliant. And because he was talking about how these bases are a liability and how the way that's justified is to say, well, we need them there, because the trade uplifts the dollar and we depend on the dollar being the world reserve currency. But even if you sort of play that out to its logical end, it's like, well, is this really beneficial to America? Is having the dollar as the world reserve currency benefit us at all? It requires us to have all this military expenditure. That's all money that has to be taken out of the American taxpayer. You know, maybe at the end of this, this really is, it's sort of stinks how we had to get there. But at the end of this, this could be the death of the American empire. And maybe we can become a republic again. Maybe we could focus on the problems here at home if we're not being distracted by being the world policeman. I mean, do you think there's a positive outcome in reality for actual Americans out of this?
Their hope is always there, especially because we are blessed by our geographical isolation,
right,
and distance from Eurasia and the Middle East. It's not like these countries are right next door, although we are doing a bang up job of importing all these people. That's another issue though. But no, that is always a hope that this will end up somewhere positive. I would also say though, if you were interested in the world reserve, the dollar being the world reserve currency, actually this militarism has not actually shored that up. It's actually weakened that as well, because a lot of people now are looking for alternatives, particularly the Chinese and others, specifically because of the militarism of the U.S. abroad. And so even the argument that the bases and the sort of freedom of navigation operations are key for ensuring the U.S. reserve currency, I actually don't think that holds up anymore under scrutiny, because clearly we are actually helping to create our own rivals, not only through global trade, but through our own actions, where we engage militarily. And then the rest of the world goes, you know what? I don't want to live under this empire. I want something else. I want more options.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, not only do we not need to be the world policeman, but we have all the prosperity and, you know, the bounty of nature here at home. We got plenty of materials here. Why we need to steal them from other, you know, countries? It's just absurd. And the whole idea of empires is supposed to actually benefit the empire, but instead we're spending endlessly to maintain this thing that really doesn't benefit us at all. It's, again, it's like, it's just sort of the inevitable consequence. You know, you called it a zombie empire. I think that's accurate. I mean, how long do you think we've been zombified? Or is this a new development with the Iran war, or have we been sleepwalking into this for a long time?
I think we've been sleepwalking. I think the beginning of the end began with the deindustrialization craze of the 1970s. Right. And I think it kind of went into hyperdrive by 2003 with the invasion of Iraq. And now everything you're seeing is just sort of the inevitable natural end point or end state of those actions. And it's, you know, it's going to be painful and brutal for not just us, but the rest of the world, as we're seeing in the Middle East. But ultimately, I do believe this is going to end with a multipolar world. There will probably be a major great power conflict between the arrival of that multipolar system and where we're at now. But I think at the end of this thing is going to be basically a great flattening and a great equalization among many poles of power in the world system.
Here we go. This is some breaking news crews bringing up. Netanyahu convened security cabinet, says he will speak to Trump tonight about Iran developments. We've seen headlines saying Netanyahu's very angry about the prospect of peace, which I feel like I've seen that headline a bunch. Anytime we we get close to solving things with Iran, it's like Netanyahu gets pissed. And just the idea of being angry
Netanyahu's
at peace.
Netanyahu's doing his wellness check. He's doing a wellness check on Trump. That's what he's doing. So.
Well, we need to do a wellness check on him. I mean, apparently he's got 10 different types of cancer. He may have died in an airstrike against Iran 2 months ago. I mean, we don't even know.
He might be a zombie. I mean, we don't know.
We really don't. But how, you know, the fear of peace, how real is that fear? How real is the idea, do you think, that the talks that are either happening now or going to happen now? Again, I can't get a handle on this stuff, but apparently there's some sort of rapprochement happening, some sort of discussion going on. How likely do you think it is that in a month from now, this whole thing is in the rearview mirror?
Oh, I think that this thing's just getting started. I think that Netanyahu knows this is a bunch of, you know, posturing by Trump. I think ultimately for Netanyahu, peace is the death knell of him, his prime ministership, but it's also the end of possibly his legal freedom. I mean, people don't remember this, but he has been under legal investigation, not just for failures related to 10-7, but for long-standing corruption charges. And about 2 weeks ago, when the Israeli Supreme Court convened for the first time in forever, the first case they took up was to reopen the corruption investigation into Netanyahu. Trump, about a week ago, called Herzog, the president of Israel, and demanded that he give Netanyahu a pardon. And Herzog said under no circumstance will he ever grant a pardon for Netanyahu. So the longer the war lasts, the greater the power is for Netanyahu, and the less likely it is that he will be taken down by the Israeli legal system. So that is also one of the perverse incentives behind Netanyahu. You know, people say it's about greater Israel, and I do think that that's an ideological imperative of the Likud party generally, but I actually think it's baser than that for Netanyahu. I think this is just his get out of jail free card. He doesn't want to have to deal with whatever criminal activity he was engaged in, the ramifications of that. So the more he fights and the wider the war becomes, the less likely it is he's going to have to pay the price.
You know, you saying that just and, you know, maybe I'm giving too much credit to Trump here, but it kind of makes sense that he wants the pardon for Benjamin Netanyahu so he can be like, look, if you're not trying to put him in jail, maybe this war will end. I mean, I've sort of considered that before, but when you said it, it actually made a lot of sense. And he's like, please pardon Netanyahu so Netanyahu will stop bombing Lebanon and we can get a ceasefire. I mean, that could very well be a strategy.
Maybe it is, but then again, you have to also remember the ideological imperative is still there. Netanyahu's party very badly wants to, at the very least, create a security, you know, cordon in southern Lebanon. Interestingly enough, though, Harrison, the IDF is not performing well against Hezbollah. And the very interesting thing here is that the Hezbollah units that are fighting Israel are a reduced detachment. They are not part of the sort of elite cadre of Hezbollah. Those guys were moved out after the pager operation, and those guys were put in the northern part of Lebanon to better protect them. So what the Golani Brigade is fighting are not the best of the Hezbollah fighters, and yet Hezbollah has been running circles around the Golani Brigade, which indicates to me how depleted these Israeli defense forces are. They need a deal even more than we do, I think.
Well, and of course, that's sort of always been the case, right? I mean, the IDF has never gone toe-to-toe with Hezbollah with any success, really.
Fair enough.
Now, Hezbollah has come is adapting strategies out of the Ukraine war. They're now using fiber optic drones, and the Israelis apparently have not learned lessons from Ukraine and have no ability to defend against this. So, it's still very much up in the air where this goes. And the crew just pulled up the headline, and I've got it here as well. As Murtaza Hussein says, right on schedule with reported U.S.-Iran talks, Israel initiates bombing of Beirut to sabotage the possible end to the war. I mean, it's uncanny, isn't it?
War.
It's uncanny. Every time Netanyahu goes to court, there's an emergency. Every time we're about to get peace with Iran, they bomb Lebanon. It's almost like it's not even a coincidence at all. We'll be right back on the other side. Brandon Weikert is my guest. Follow him on X at WeTheBrandon. We'll be right back.
I have been very blessed and honored in 32 years on air and 28 years of InfoWars to have seen the whole world change. When I first got started, almost nobody knew about the globalists. People were literally in the dark. Look how far we've come. We are exposing them. Jeffrey Epstein, the pedophile rings, the poison COVID shots, the open borders, the global wars, the 5G, all of it.
is coming out. Humanity is rallying. This is the fourth turning. This is the great awakening. It is the answer to their great reset. I am so proud of humanity, and I'm so thankful to all the viewers and listeners who over the years have supported us by prayer, word of mouth, and financial support at thealexjonesshow.com. So InfoWars has been shut down, but we've launched the Alex Jones Network. We plan to crank this sucker up. We got new studios, they're even bigger, being built. And we want to go 19 hours a day live by the end of 2026 from 5 a.m. until midnight. So if I build it, will you come? Yes, I know you will. So now more than ever, go to thealexjonesshow.com and get incredible supplements. Our methylene blue is the best. Our methylene red is proprietary. Our bovine colostrum, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel, incredible collectible knives, and so much more. You are literally financing the tip of the spear and the resistance that the tyrants and the globalists hate above everything else. InfoWars is a proven winner. They have a URL. They have an old studio. That means nothing. You are the InfoWar. And if you accept this mission, if you take action, if you spread the word, if you share our links, AlexJonesLive.com, the news site, the live feeds, the articles, the videos, it's incredible. If you share the feed with everybody you know at AlexJonesApp.com, get the free Droid or Apple download of the app, it is insane. All the power lies with you. That's why when callers call in and thank me, I say, thank me. I would fight this no matter what. I'd fight it in a ditch. I'd fight if I was homeless. We're all in this together. You have all the power, but you have to use the power now. Share the feeds to AlexJonesLive.com. Share the URL, AlexJonesApp.com. And go to thealexjonesshow.com with the widest selection of Patriot apparel to wear your uniform of liberty openly and proudly. It's such an adventure to wear this apparel and to get the incredible supplements that will empower your life so you'll know how real this is. I only sell stuff that really works, and I want you to get it and take it and love it and have a great response. We have a 90+% reorder rate. So many of you are on the fence. Take action now. Step into a wider world. Go to thealexjonesshow.com today and support this broadcast. But regardless, take the feed, take the live links at alexjoneslive.com/show and on Rumble and Relox Shows on X, the Alex Jones Show on Rumble, and share those links, and it changes the world. You are unstoppable when you decide to get up at the plate and take action. This is real. This isn't hype. You've seen the results. Now the ball's in your court. AlexJonesLive.com and AlexJonesApp.com. Take action. You are the reincarnation of Paul Revere. You are unstoppable. The globalists are in deep crap. Take action now at AlexJonesLive.com and AlexJonesApp.com. And I want to be clear. I don't own the AlexJonesStore.com. Bigly, that owns the Alex Jones Network, does. We've got a major deal with Rumble to push our information. It's already top on Rumble, but to supercharge it. The most important coordinate in this fight is rumble.com/Alex Jones Live. rumble.com/Alex Jones Live. We are already at the top of Rumble, but we're going to go even further partnering with them. This is the coordinates of liberty. Take action right now at rumble.com/Alex Jones Live, and we are unstoppable. The power of humanity is unstoppable if you simply unleash it now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Joining me this hour, yeah, sorry, we got a little technical difficulties here. My button's messed up again. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. However you're watching us, congratulations on circumventing the censorship and finding the forbidden outlet, the Alex Jones Network. Please do share those links on X, on Facebook, on your text messages, however you can. Let people know where to find us at AJ and Live, Alex Jones Live on Rumble, and of course, follow me at Harrison H. Smith, and you can follow my guest, Brandon Weikert, at We the Brandon on X. And, you know, Brandon, I think the Iran war is going so bad, they're about to introduce aliens. Like, I think if you really want to know how bad the Iran war is going, they're about to do alien disclosure. I think that tells you everything you need to know.
Better be careful, because Epstein's probably in those files too, so.
Uh-oh. No, but I mean, all of this stuff is so insane. I can't help but seeing a connection between these. But I want to get your response to some of the things, some of the statements made by Marco Rubio yesterday. Clip 25 here. If we can go to clip 25, this is Marco Rubio saying what the new end to the goal of the war is. And, I mean, it's just cartoonish. It would be funny if this wasn't a war with people dying and the end of the world possibly, you know, in the offing. But let's go to clip 25 now.
As President Trump has said, and the facts clearly bear out, the United States of America holds all the cards. There is no scenario here in which if they decide to join a ladder of escalation, they wind up getting the last say. But our preference is for these straits to be opened to the way they're supposed to be opened, back to the way it was. Anyone can use it, no mines in the water, nobody paying tolls. That's what we have to get back to, and that's the goal here.
That's the goal here, back to the way it was, Brandon. I mean, just admit defeat. Like, that's what you're doing there is, yeah, is effectively admitting defeat.
Yeah, well, and it gets worse for us, unfortunately, because not only are they not going to admit defeat, but this morning, East Coast time at least, this morning, it was revealed that the Iranians have created an entirely new bureaucracy for basically running the so-called toll booth in the Strait of Hormuz. And so what that indicates to me, I think it's called the Iranian port, something, port authority or something. But basically that indicates to me that the Iranians are now not only saying we're in control now, but they're saying we are never going back to the way it was before. And while I definitely am not somebody who thinks you can rely on international law for a variety of reasons, it should be pointed out here, and I don't say this because I'm in favor of this, but this is just the way it is. It should be noted that there is a precedence for Iran doing what it's doing in the context of international law. There's the Montreux Convention, which governs Turkey's control over the, I think it's the, what is it, Turkish Strait or the Dardanelles that leads to, yeah. And, so for 100 years since the Montreux Convention, they've basically charged ships transit fees and they've managed what is inherently Turkish territorial waters through those straits. Even though it's classified as an international waterway, it falls completely within Turkish territorial waters. Same thing is true of the Strait of Hormuz. It falls within Iranian territorial waters, technically speaking. Now the Iranians never asserted control, really, ever, over the strait, but now that is done. Those days are over, and we caused this situation, yep, by attacking the way we did when we did. So the Iranians are never letting go of this. And like you said, you know, Marco just looks like a clown. Our leadership looks buffoonish with them talking like this as if they're going to be able to change this. The only way they're going to change this is if they get regime change in Iran, and that is not on the table.
No, not even remotely on the table. No. And we did start it. Like, we started this. That's the crazy thing. And so for Iran, it's perfectly reasonable for them to say, look, we're not going to end this until we have real deterrence, until we really let everybody know, right, you can't just bomb us at will and expect us to take it. We do have the capability to respond, and we will respond. I mean, I think they've already kind of proven that. How much longer do you think it needs to go until Iran feels that they've established that deterrence?
Well, it's not going to end until the United States reduces its physical presence in the region. Mm. So this is why, and in fact, actually, President Pezeshkian, who's the Iranian president, interestingly, he was raised among the Kurdish population of Iran, and I bring that up for a very specific reason that I hope we get to.
Right.
But ultimately, the Iranian president has made it very clear at the very beginning of the war, he told, I think it was the BBC or Al Jazeera, he said to them that we can't stop this war until the Americans know that they are not welcome to do this anymore. And the only way to do that is to make sure the Americans reduce their footprint in the region, which, of course, that gets back to what we were talking about before the break with the bases.
Sure.
So until the U.S. fully reduces its physical presence in the region, the hostilities will continue on some level. And I brought up the Kurdish issue because now we're hearing, and we've been hearing, the administration wants to covertly arm the Kurds of Iran. I would just point out that the Kurds of Iran are not the same as the Kurds of neighboring Iraq. The Kurds of neighboring Iraq hated Saddam. They hated the Ba'athist regime that we ultimately toppled. They were sort of these rebels. They had no problem taking up arms on our behalf against Baghdad in 2003. That is not the case with the Iranian Kurds. Many of the Iranian Kurds are integrated into the regime. They're part of the elite. As I said, the current president was raised among the Kurds of Iran. That's very different. And there's a lot of rumor that the CIA had attempted about a month and a half ago to arm the Kurds of Iran, and the Iranian Kurds took the guns and gave us the bird.
Right.
Obviously didn't overthrow the regime. So that's, you know, this is where we are though, because the administration is so desperate, Harrison, yeah, to have regime change.
That's exactly, you took the word out of my mouth, desperation. It was a desperate act. And, obviously it turned around on us. And but when you bring up the Kurds, that makes me think of Turkey, because Turkey has, you know, long running, yeah, anonymity or, you know, enmity with the Kurds. How does Turkey play into this? What role do you think they play in whatever this new, you know, new world order is going to be? And what role are they playing right now in terms of their relationship with Iran?
Well, it's interesting because the Turks have traditionally, under Erdogan, the current president, have had very positive relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. They've always gotten along. In 2013, they were involved with the, the gold for oil scandal, I think is what it was called. They've always been very close with the Iranians. But they've also, Erdogan, despite his rhetoric against Israel, Erdogan has always maintained very close ties with the Israeli government. Mm. In fact, the current scheme of moving Azerbaijani natural gas and oil out of Central Asia via pipelines through the Kurdish part of Iraq into places like Syria, into places like the Levant, this is a Turkish scheme that was concocted with the assistance of the Israelis and the U.S. So the Turks are playing this very unique middle game, which is the traditional role they play in the Middle East. Remember, Turkey is not ethnically Arab or Persian, and they tend to be Sunni Muslim, so they tend to be religiously more in line with the Arab states than with the Iranian state, but yet they still have positive relations with Iran. Ultimately, Harrison, I think that what you're going to witness though soon, with the way the Israelis are constantly attacking Turkey, I think you could very easily see something shape up where the Turks maybe are aligned with the Iranian Kurds and the Iran state, but they're still very much disliking the Kurds of Syria, for instance, because those guys are the ones that have problems with the Turkish state. So ultimately, I think you're seeing this very interesting interplay between Turkey, Israel, and Iran, where Turkey's playing this hedging role. But Israel could easily, and I think they're starting to, push Turkey away, because Netanyahu's clearly trying to pick a fight with Turkey now, which, you know, is where we're at, so.
Yeah, and of course, Turkey's a member of NATO, so that gets real complicated real fast. I mean, you'd want to talk about a tangled web. I'm just trying to visualize as you're talking, like, okay, these guys don't like these guys, but they're allies mm-hmm. So they're friends with Iran, but not the Kurds, but yes, with the Iranian Kurds, and they're friends yep. with Israel, but also friends with Iran. I mean, it's a total yep. tangled web, and, you know, Turkey does seem to thrive in that sort of situation where they can be friends yep. and enemies with everybody all the time. I mean, same thing with Russia and Turkey. I yep. mean, they have enmity and yet work together all the time. Turkey is a total wild card in all of this. How does this play out with NATO? Because I've seen the same signals that you have. The Iranians or the Israelis, rather, saying after Iran, Turkey will be next. We're seeing now sort of think pieces out of American outlets saying, you know, Turkey really shouldn't be in NATO. Maybe we should drive them out. I mean, they are clearly seeding the ground for the future narrative that Turkey is the new Iran, right? I mean, how does this play out with them right. being in NATO?
Well, one AEI fellow even wrote that the U.S. should leave NATO because Turkey's in NATO.
Right.
Which, of course, now you think, wow, that is really devious because obviously that would appeal to the president, who is understandably wanted out of NATO. I've wanted out of NATO for many years, but how we get out is very important. And would we be getting out because it would be in our interest, which it would be in our interest to get out, or are we getting out because it would make it easier for Israel to start a fight with Turkey
right.
if the U.S. was no longer the centerpiece of NATO? And this is, you know, this is very complex here. I believe fundamentally that you are witnessing a generational shift in the Middle East. I think that no matter what, there will be a reduction in the power and potency of the U.S. as the kind of key shaper of events in the Middle East after this war. And I think ultimately you're going to see the rise of a new interplay, a new balance of power, between the, to some degree, the Saudis in the Arab world, the Islamic Republic of Iran, the Turkish sort of Islamic Republic, and then Israel sort of on the periphery still playing a role. But this new balance of power that's shaping up is not going to benefit either the United States or Israel, in my opinion, in the long run, because these powers recognize that Israel is kind of like a rabid dog right now. And even the countries in the Arab states that want to do business with Israel, look at what they're getting out of this. They're getting attacked by Iran, and they're not happy about it. So on some level, you're seeing a balancing act. And don't forget also the Pakistanis. Pakistanis are providing a security umbrella for Saudi Arabia. In fact, most of Saudi Arabia's armed forces are staffed by Pakistanis. They pay them better than the Pakistani army does. So, and now the Pakistanis are extending their nuclear umbrella to Saudi Arabia, allegedly. So the whole region is shifting, and it's going to be less American, more local, and it's definitely not going to be oriented toward Israel.
Yeah, and it just we're just setting ourselves up to be screwed over by any of this. Again, we didn't need to start the fight in the first place. We certainly didn't need to back Israel to the hilt in the way that we did. And it seems like this could have been an opportunity for America to become trade partners with some of these countries and sort of reform our relationship in a positive direction. And yet we're going the worst possible route. I mean, it is especially insane when you know that, I mean, unless things have changed, Turkey is still the home to our, like, nuclear stockpile in Europe, right? I mean,
we've got B-61 gravity bombs in Incirlik.
That's another twist to this. Are we going to go to war with a country that has our nuclear weapons? I mean, it's crazy.
Well, the key thing is we have operational control over them, but obviously, if they really wanted to seal up the base, they could, the Turks could. And the Turks are a competent military. The Turks are not, the Iranians are a very competent unconventional force. The Turks are a very competent conventional force. So if I were Israel, I would not really want to be picking a fight with the Turks. And that if the Turks needed to put the squeeze on anybody in that region, they pretty well could, with no backup from us. They wouldn't need that. And in terms of, closing down our base there, I do know this is always a contingency that we have had to plan for, and I'm sure the Turks have planned for, is if they do try to take those nuclear weapons over, because ultimately it's in their country. Getting them out would be very hard. So this is sort of the nightmare scenario we're going down, and I hope it doesn't get to that. But ultimately, Turkey doesn't need nukes to be a very effective, military. They've proven that they're very effective, and they have a very robust industrial base that can build out ships and warplanes, very advanced ones, on their own. It's the Israelis and the U.S. who seem to be really in a corner strategically. And you're right, in terms of the trade, remember last year, last year, Trump defied all expectations and went to Saudi Arabia and did these incredible trade deals. I mean, really, I was writing at the time that Trump was completely, remaking the world system for the better. And then you could build off of that was the Abraham Accords from his first term. He is basically, with this war, he has destroyed both of those policy sets. There's no going back to that now because we're so sucked in. So it is the collapse at our own hand. And I think it was unintentional. I don't think it was 5D chess. It's the collapse by our own hand of a system that we spent about 70 years building in the Middle East.
Yeah, well, it may not have been intentional from Trump's point of view, but I have a hard time believing that they didn't know that the strait being closed would cause the fertilizer shortage. I mean, it seems to me like all of the negative, unforeseen consequences of this are very much in line with what we know the globalists have wanted for a while, right?
Yeah, well, this gets to my buddy Michael Yan, you know, who's been warning me for 5 years that the Giga famine was coming. It was just a question of what was going to trip the thing off. Certainly there is a sect of elites who, for various reasons, want to create artificial shortages. We saw that play out a bit in COVID. It wasn't as severe, believe it or not, as it could have been. And so this group might be getting a second shot at the second chance here to do the shortage scheme that they want. It's definitely, though, a group of very powerful interlocking interests behind the scenes who actually are happy with the shortages. I will say, though, I don't think the president understood what he was doing. I think the president believed this was going to be Venezuela 2.0. I think that the Netanyahu was blowing him up saying, oh, 96 hours, you kill the Ayatollah and those IRGC guys and they'll collapse like a house of cards like Maduro did. And I think Trump believed him. But I do know that our generals, General Kane, I know this was revealed in that Reuters report, right before the war began. The Joint Chiefs of Staff did tell him, Mr. President, this is not Venezuela, and they said that the Iranians could very well shut down the strait, which will then have all these knock-on effects. But Trump, being Trump, can't hear negative news. You know, he can't listen to anything negative. He's like a classic boomer. He's got to, everything's got to be on the up and up always. And so he acted in contravention to the best military advice he was given.
And, you know, Alex talked about this a lot, I think, on his Monday show. I think it might have been with Michael Yan. And sort of comparing Trump's current geopolitical behavior to Adolf Hitler. And that's what I think of when I, you know, that was Hitler's impression of Russia,
that's
right?
That's a very Michael Yan thing. Yeah.
Well, but you go, hey, Russia's so weak. All we have to do is kick in the door, right? There's some quote from Hitler of,
100%.
It's a shaky house. You kick in the door, the whole
thing
collapses.
By the way, Napoleon thought this too about the Russians. This is a common, you know, you make these assumptions based on, you know, things unrelated. And, I don't mean to cut you off, but yes, it's not just Hitler. It's Napoleon and there's several other. I mean, everybody should look up Crassus, the great Roman general who believed he could easily take out the Persian Empire, and he ended up paying the ultimate price for that assumption. So this is great history replaying.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, he was captured, right? And
captured and paraded, and I believe they ultimately killed him.
Yeah,
but not before humiliating him.
Yeah. Richest man in the world, one of the triumvirates, right? Or maybe I'm, I mean.
No, I think that's right.
It's just amazing the way history repeats like this, that it's in the same area. It's Persia and it's the new Rome.
You don't think it would happen. Right. You don't think it would happen in the United States, because anybody who's aware of our founding realizes how hard the founders worked to make us unlike the rest of the world.
Right.
You know, we have our own Crassus, in Trump.
And then,
this very Romanesque figure in his own right.
God, and just to add to the dimension of the Hitler similarities, you know, one of the reasons Hitler didn't just march on Moscow is because he had this fear of repeating Napoleon's mistake, right?
Yes.
And so he was like, we're not doing what Napoleon did. We're not making that mistake.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking at Trump going, hey, I'm not George W. Bush. I'm not going to make his mistake.
That's right.
No, you're going to make all of your own mistakes, sir.
All
it's going to be all on your
all
own.
All new ones.
Wow.
That's right. And that's really where we are right now is you have these epic level disasters forming. There it is.
Yep.
There we go. You have these epic level disasters, forming that kind of repeat or rhyme with history that happened before. But, there's no stopping it. All we can do is sort of document. I keep telling people I'm more of an obituarist than I am anything else. I'm just documenting the end because Harrison, I was out with the Air Force last week at a facility in the Southeast United States, and it was very interesting, the generational divide in the officer corps. You had the boomers and the Gen Xer officers who hated everything I was telling them.
Mm.
And then you had millennial and Gen Z officers, young guys, who were nodding in agreement the whole time when I spoke. There is clearly a not only history repeating, but there's clearly a very serious generational divide with people who are 40 and older and under 40. And I think it's going to define American politics for the next 10 to 20 years.
You know, I was just talking, I just did Alex Stein's show, and he and I did a debate with Owen Schroyer against some boomers. and we were reminiscing about it and going, you know, we got along with the boomers perfectly. We agreed on everything. It was like, this isn't even a debate. What are we even doing here? Until it got to foreign policy. And then suddenly it was like this shocking divide where they were convinced that we'd found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and what we were doing in Iran is, you know, imperative. There really is a generational divide specifically with foreign policy. And that's very strange. But it sort of makes sense if you come up in a world where America is the man, the big man on campus. They're the man stomping around, you know, telling nobody what to do. I guess it's just hard to let that go.
Well, it is. And also, I mean, the memory of the Holocaust when it comes to specifically issues related to Israel and the Middle East, I mean, you know, they were closer to it than our generation and the gen. I mean, I'm millennial. So our generation and the Gen Z generation, certainly. So I can empathize with or sympathize with them on some level, being sensitive to it. But at the same time, you can't let that historical event that happened in Europe, by the way, we didn't do it. It was
Europe.
No, we
stopped it, actually.
We stopped it, right? You can't let that historical event, though, be the definition of the entire U.S. position in the Middle East. That's a terrible way to go about things. You need to be much more judicious and responsible.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, the boomers are not known for their judiciousness or responsibility. You know, remember, this is the generation of Woodstock. So, I don't know how judicious they are.
Hey, hashtag not all boomers. If you're listening to us boomers, you're one of the good ones. We love you and we need you on our side. Right. We need the boomer waffen, you know, the troops coming in. but seriously, you know, nothing better than a based boomer. But man, on average, it's really not good. Just quickly, I know we only have 2 minutes left, but the bombing of Lebanon, what's going on with Lebanon? I mean, the whole thing seems absurd because you've got the government of Lebanon negotiating with the government of Israel when really the combatant is Hezbollah, who's not at the meeting. So, how does that even work out?
Oh, well, the whole thing is an exercise in stupidity. It is just designed to have a facade of peace. The Israeli government is fully committed. I talked to a very senior retired Israeli guy, IDF general, who was saying their goal is to create a buffer, between, they're calling it the Gaza model, actually, which I just couldn't believe that they're openly calling it that, but between, northern, Israel and southern Lebanon. So they don't really care about peace. They're going to do what they're going to do. Again, it's important to remember Hezbollah had reduced its footprint in South Lebanon after the Pagers operation. The force that's fighting there is not the prime Hezbollah force, and yet the Israelis are not winning this fight that they've started. They are barely breaking even. And so that indicates, and in fact, if you look at the way that they're doing these attacks, that they're sending, the Israelis are these Merkava main battle tanks in these very tight convoy of these rows into the city areas where Hezbollah has set up these brilliant kill boxes, and they're just slaughtering the Merkava tanks, the Hezbollah is. And that's partly because the Israeli troops, I think, are not willing to advance on foot unless they see the Israeli tanks advancing ahead of them, which of course is not how you can conduct modern warfare after Ukraine has shown, as Ukraine has shown us.
Well, this has always been the issue. Israel does not do well with, you know, ground operations. They need America. They need American boots on the ground, which is why everything is going topsy-turvy, because despite everything Trump is willing to do, we still haven't put boots on the ground fighting Iran, which is a small blessing we can be thankful for. Brandon Weikert, follow him on X at WeTheBrandonWeikertReport.com. Buy his books, support this man. He's been right about everything so far.
We've been right about the poison shots and raised the main alarm, and right about the open borders, and right about the wars, and right about the entire agenda. That's why the bad guys want us off air. That's why it's such a revolutionary act when you take the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X or on Rumble at AJN Live. Get the free app for your phone at alexjonesapp.com. When you support us, we are absolutely unstoppable. All of our victories are shared together. It's because of you. Take action now at realalexjones.com and thealexjonesstore.com.
So much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to thealexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster, and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off Methylene Blue Tincture, Methylene Blue Caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit Caps and Gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just sea moss and shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
Do you think I'm going to sell you something that doesn't really work? I always ask people, they never know the answer. Even salesmen, I go, who's the best salesman? The best salesman, a smart salesman, goes and finds what is the hottest, best product that's in demand. It sells itself. I promote freedom. I promote liberty. You are insane if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, the very best out there. You're insane if you don't get our methylene red. You're crazy if you don't do bovine colostrum. You're crazy if you don't take these products. They really work and they fund the operation.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Alex Jones Network, AlexJonesLive.com. Get the app. Follow us on X at AJN Live. That's at AJN Live. Follow me at Harrison H. Smith for all of your informational needs. And a big shout out to Matt Baker. Follow him at slave_2_liberty on X. And he's been helping us out a lot behind the scenes doing translations. He's got an AI bot that can translate things and alter the person's voice so it sounds, you know, it's like it's them speaking. And it's extremely helpful because it just comes across better, I think, than when I'm reading the subtitles over whoever it is. And so I asked him yesterday, if you're watching the show, to translate Nayib Bukele's speech that he gave to his troops a couple years ago. It must have been in around 2023, if I had to guess. But this is sort of on the tail end of their the war that they were waging against the gangs in their country. And I bring it up because this speech is like one of the most brilliant speeches given in modern times. And this is what we need to hear. It's not so much about how bad the bad guys are. We need to reinforce the reason we're fighting the good fight. The values that we represent and are fighting for have to come first and foremost before, you know, the hatred of the other side has to be the reason for your existence and the reason that you're fighting above all else. Let's go to clip 31 here. Matt Baker translated this, and I think this is one of the best speeches ever given. And if you want to know how you save your country, it's with a mindset like this.
We have been at war with the gangs for 8 months now, and thanks to God, we are winning. This is an incredibly surprising victory that is very close. Let it be made absolutely clear and known to all that the glory and honor belong solely to the Almighty God and are intended for God alone. We human beings have the extraordinary privilege and humble duty of serving as God's instruments, every single one of us working together, to bring lasting peace, true freedom, and genuine happiness to the Salvadoran people. And we are the instrument to heal this land. Each one of you is an instrument of God to make it happen. Peace is not achieved by signing agreements between the corrupt, by dividing power among murderers. Peace is built with work, with sweat, with effort, and with the courage that you and your fellow police officers have. There must be something that tells you that you are part of something more important than yourself and that it is worth risking your life for that which is greater than yourself. Those are values. Fundamental values such as unwavering bravery, remarkable courage, and immense physical and mental strength, alongside strict discipline, deep-seated patriotism, a sense of honor, steadfast loyalty, and a profound selfless love for others in our community. These are fundamental values of human society, but they are values that are increasingly being lost in the world. If you watch international news, you'll notice how the most important values that human beings have, such as honor, loyalty, bravery, courage, and love for others, are precisely the values that are being lost more and more every day, that are becoming increasingly scarce. And that's why you see how societies that seem to have already made it are now deteriorating, because they are losing the values that made them great. Values that probably weren't strong in this land, but were strong in other lands. And that's why those lands grew and became great. But now they are the ones losing those values. And on the contrary, in El Salvador, the values that used to be degraded in our country are now the most important ones. And if not, just look at yourselves, young men and women who possess all these values. How could a nation with such values not rise up? How could a nation that puts God first and then puts in its work and effort with these kinds of values not rise up?
Again, that's just exactly right. And really, the point that hits me, there's two phrases he says in there. One, he says, you don't achieve peace by dividing the spoils between the corrupt and handshake agreements between murderers. Absolutely brilliant. And then, of course, the fact that, you know, there has to be something worth giving your life for. You have to believe in something. There has to be something that you're seeking to achieve. And in El Salvador, they've proven that it's possible. What's it worth dying for? Ridding your country of the poison of the gangs and the crime and the sickness that was tearing you down, and building up a world where families can go play in the park. Peace is worth fighting for. And we have to do something to stop the tragedy that's unfolding in front of us in every Western country. And the Nayib Bukele.
Do you think I'm going to sell you something that doesn't really work? I always ask people, they never know the answer. Even salesmen, I go, who's the best salesman? Who's the smartest salesman? Who are the most successful salesmen? The best salesman, a smart salesman, goes and finds what is the hottest, best product that's in demand. It sells itself. I promote freedom. I promote liberty. I promote what I think is good. My marketing strategy, if I like something and think it's great and I research it, I push it on you. You are insane if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, the very best doctor. You're insane if you don't get our methylene red. You're crazy if you don't do bovine colostrum. In fact, I realized the first few months I took that, I got busy. It ran out. I didn't get more. I just remember that and found some. Was taking it last night. So good for your hair, your nails, your eyes, your whole body. It's the first 2 weeks of the milk a cow puts out. Any mammal does. It is super nutrient. Incredible. You're crazy if you don't take these products. They really work and they fund the operation.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. The Alex Jones Network is how you can find us. I mean, this is the way my brain works, okay? I don't know how other people think about this stuff. But here's a headline. We're going to talk about Howard Lutnick. Howard Lutnick today was in Congress answering questions about Jeffrey Epstein behind closed doors. There's been some pretty spectacular things said about it. But Leading Report at Leading Report on X says, just in, Howard Lutnick voluntarily appeared and testified on Epstein before the House Oversight Committee, says when he saw a massage table at Epstein's home, he decided to end any relationship with him. That doesn't make any sense. Do you understand? That doesn't make any sense. There is actually nothing suspicious about seeing a massage table at somebody's house. Do you understand that? It's like, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know if I can explain it to you, you know, more than that. It just doesn't make any sense. He's like trying to come up with a reason, like a good reason to be like, oh, you know, I got suspicious of him. And so I ended my relationship with him. You ended your relationship with the man because he had a massage table at his house? He also has a plasticine mask of you at his house. Is that not a little creepier? He has your disembodied head hanging on his wall over the dentist chair that he has installed in his home. That might have been a bit of a red flag too there, buddy. Massage table, not actually a evidence of guilt of anything. Do you understand that? Like I've got family members that have like chronic issues, and so they have a massage table at their house because their husband massages them regularly. Like, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know what else I can say about it. Like, you could have said anything else, and it would make just as much sense. Well, I was going to be friends with Epstein, and then I saw a basket of fruit at his house, and I said, enough. I'm not doing it. I'm breaking off my relationship with him. Like, a basket of fruit? What? Well, yeah, seeing a massage table at someone's house is not actual sufficient reason to like break off with somebody, unless you knew what the massage table was used for. Okay, so maybe that's what it was. Maybe you saw the massage table and were like, oh my gosh, the rumors are true, because you actually did know what Epstein was up to, and seeing the massage table was confirmation of what you already knew. That's the only way this makes sense. And I'm just kind of confused at what he was even trying to say here. He saw a massage table at Epstein's house, and so he broke off his relationship with him. Again, that just does not make any sense. He visited his home and saw a massage table in 2005, but acknowledged two other encounters over the following 7 years. Yeah, again, it just doesn't make sense. It's one of these things that it's like, you saying that actually makes me suspicious. If you had just said, look, I didn't know what Epstein was up to, I was friends with him, but like, so were thousands of people, and like, not everybody is a rapist that did that. Like, yeah, I was like casual acquaintances with him. And look, this is the way billionaires operate. There's not that many of us. We all know each other. And so if you're, you know, cruising around the islands, as we often are, you know, we know the guy, might as well go have dinner on his island. Like, what's the big deal? Like, if you were actually innocent, it wouldn't be hard to be like, oh yeah, Epstein, that guy was, I regret ever being, but like, he's coming up with excuses and reasons for why he stopped being friends with them, and those reasons don't make any sense. So it's actually making me more suspicious. It's actually sort of confirmation to me that he definitely knows more than he's saying, because why would a massage table make you break off relationships with somebody, a relationship with somebody? That does not make any sense. It's crazy. It's crazy. Unless you knew that he used massages as code word for raping underage girls. Then it might make sense. You'd go, oh my God, the rumors are true. I think the dentist chair is a little bit more suspicious personally. Personally, I think if I walk into someone's house and they have a room set aside with a dentist chair, and I go, oh, you're a dentist? And they go, nope. I'm breaking off relationships with them. Yeah, that is something I'd go, okay, I need to leave with my teeth while I can. I need to leave before I'm strapped down and subjected to something, which is clearly the only possible reason to have a dentist chair in your lair. That's disturbing. Okay, that would be believable if he said, yeah, I saw the dentist chair that's not used for dentistry, and I got the hell out of there. A massage table, that doesn't make any sense. He can't recall why his family lunched on Epstein Island. It just slipped his mind, I'm sure. Story from Post Gazette. Howard Lutnick appears before House panel to answer his changing story on Jeffrey Epstein. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick appeared Wednesday before a House committee investigating sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, trying to explain to lawmakers his contact with the financier after Epstein's 2008 conviction for soliciting prostitution from an underage girl. And look, that alone, like, you can convince me, I would be willing to believe that certain people could interact with Epstein and not know who he is and not recognize what was going on. Somebody like Howard Lutnick, somebody in the exact same socioeconomic circles that Jeffrey Epstein is in, do you think anybody in those circles was unaware of what was happening to Epstein? I mean, really think about this. There's only like a couple thousand billionaires in America total. That might even be too high. But I think I heard yesterday that there are 1,500 billionaires in the UK. So we probably have a couple times that amount. But it's not that big of a group of people, right? And that's their social circle. That's who they interact with. That's who they spend time with. That's who they hang out with. So just imagine that you go to a large high school with 3,000, 4,000 people. If one of the people at that high school gets convicted for, you know, child human trafficking, you don't think everybody at the school knows it? You don't think that news spreads like wildfire through the very, very small social circles that you run in? Of course, everybody knew about this. So any attempt to claim that after 2008, people like Howard Lutnick, who lived right next door to Jeffrey Epstein, who was basically Jeffrey Epstein with a beard, in a lot of ways, maybe not in all the ways, but maybe in those ways too. Of course he knew. They all knew. Every single one of them knew. The only question we should be asking is why they continued to be friends with him even though they knew. Because we can just assume with full confidence they all knew. I knew. If you were watching Alex Jones Show, you knew. They didn't know? Bull crap. Of course they knew. The cabinet member, Howard Lutnick, was the latest powerful political figure to appear before the House Oversight Committee. He had previously given contradictory statements. We call those lies. In the business, we call contradictory statements lies, actually. When they're about your personal knowledge of something and you change your story, that's because you're lying, okay? But sure, we can say they were contradictory statements. Fine, contradictory to the truth. At least one of them has to be. So he gave contradictory statements about Epstein, but said he's done nothing wrong and welcomed the closed-door interview with lawmakers. The transcribed interview is a test of how much scrutiny lawmakers will apply to the powerful men who kept company with Epstein even after his conviction. Trump's administration has tried unsuccessfully for more than a year to move past the issue. Yeah, we're never moving past it, y'all. This is who you are now. When history books look back and your name is in them, it won't be Howard Lutnick, you know, brilliant investor, patriot cabinet member. It'll be Howard Lutnick, Jeffrey Epstein's friend. Bill Gates, Jeffrey Epstein's friend. That's who you are now, and you deserve to forever be smeared as that. Lutnick played down his ties to Epstein, who was once his neighbor, next-door neighbor, I'll add. In New York City, under questioning from Democrats during an unrelated hearing this year, Lutnick described their contact as a handful of emails and a pair of messages between 2011 and 2012. But that admission came after Lutnick had previously claimed on a podcast last year that he decided to, quote, never be in the room with Epstein after a 2005 tour of Epstein's home, which included a massage table, disturbed Lutnick and his wife. Again, that just doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. So what are you talking about? So apparently, like, meeting 3 years before Epstein gets arrested, he's still ostensibly, theoretically, never even been accused of anything. Why would seeing a massage table in a billionaire's island mansion make you concerned? Did it have handcuffs on it? Was there blood smeared on it? Or were you aware of what he did during those massages, and so seeing the massage chair was confirmation of what you already knew? It does not make any sense any other way. And that, it's this type of stuff that I don't get how people get away with this stuff. That is a, on the face of it, nonsensical thing to even say. So I can understand how people get away with believable lies. It's not even a believable lie. It doesn't make any sense on the face of it. He found the lunch invite unsettling, but went anyway. Yeah, that's what I do. When I've cut off somebody because I know that they're, raping children, and then they send me an invite to their mysterious island, it's very unsettling, but also I'm kind of hungry, but also my kids want to play on the beach. Okay, sure. The Democrats say that Trump would fire Howard Lutnick if he saw the video of the Epstein testimony, according to the House Oversight Committee Democrats. Following closed-door testimony from Howard Lutnick before the House Oversight Committee on his ties to Jeffrey Epstein, Democrats called the Commerce Secretary's performance, quote, embarrassing. Quote, if Donald Trump had seen the video transcript, he would have fired Howard Lutnick, said Congressman Ro Khanna, a progressive Democrat from California. Lawmakers pointed to alleged inconsistencies between Lutnick's previous comments on podcast that he stopped associating with the sex offender after 2005. The Justice Department's release of case files show that Lutnick had two engagements with Epstein. Years past that, he attended a 2011 event at Epstein's home, and Lutnick's family had lunch with Epstein on his private island in 2012, 4 years after Epstein was sentenced to 13 months in jail for procuring a minor for prostitution. And this is the thing, too. It's like the two visits that they mention here are the two visits that we know because we have evidence of them. So you understand what that looks like, right? You understand if you go, I never had contact with Jeffrey Epstein. And we go, we have proof that you were with him at least two times. And he goes, yes, those two times I was with Jeffrey Epstein. But other than that, nope, not at all. It's like, you're just saying that because we don't have evidence for it, huh? Because you said you never saw him. Then we had evidence that you saw him. Then you admitted to those visits. But that's all. But maybe if we find evidence of more visits, you'll remember those too. I wonder. Like, do you know what I mean? Do you understand what I mean? That, like, if they're only admitting to the things that you have evidence for, and they only admitted to those things after you provided the evidence, that's because there's probably more stuff that they're not admitting to because you don't have evidence for it. I think what I'm saying is the man's a liar, and only tells the truth when he's forced to. And he's our commerce secretary, and he made billions of dollars off the tariffs that he wrote. I think Trump should fire him a long time ago. Comer says Lutnick wasn't 100% truthful about being on Epstein's island ahead of interviews. How many ways can we say lie without saying lie? He wasn't 100% truthful. He provided inconsistent statements. He was less than totally truthful about everything he said. Yeah, he's a liar and he's lying. We've been over this before, children. Why do we lie? Oh, to cover up a bigger crime, right? The lie is not the crime. The lie is always and forever in service of the actual crime that they're hiding from you by lying. Always and every time. Unless he's just a pathological liar and lies because he thinks it's fun. But aside from that, the only reason anybody ever lies is because the truth is more painful. Like, this is obvious. Lutnick admitted to the 2012 lunch during his 10th February testimony before the Senate Appropriations Committee. Quote, I did have lunch with him as I was on a boat going across on a family vacation, Lutnick said. In the testimony, Lutnick also insisted that he barely had anything to do with Epstein. According to Suhas Subramaniam, a Democrat representative of Virginia, of course, the Commerce Secretary said he could remember nothing about the visit to the island, couldn't remember why he was there, couldn't remember anything he saw. Yeah, that's normal, right? I'm telling you, it's like, it's just the most nonsensical set of circumstances I've ever heard. The man is a billionaire who lives next door to Jeffrey Epstein, says he knows nothing about him. He visits his house in 2005 and says, I cut off a connection with him because despite nobody being suspicious of him, seeing a massage table in his house was enough for me to say no. Okay, that doesn't make any sense. Then I got a mysterious invite to him while I was on family vacation that really unsettled me. But I went and had lunch anyway, and now I have no memory of it, as if it's been wiped from my brain. Dude, arrest this man. Arrest this man immediately. Do you understand this is the type of nonsense that you get when you arrest an 80 IQ serial killer and they try to explain why they weren't the serial killer? Like, it's just nonsense. It's just excuses that don't make any sense, timelines that don't abide. It's genuinely all completely insane. And he expects us to believe it? Like, what? Wow. Oh, maybe he was a pathological liar. That's what some people think. Quote, I was very comfortable saying that Howard Lutnick is a pathological liar who is enabling the most egregious cover-up in American history, said Congresswoman Yasemin Ansari, while noting that the Commerce Secretary told lawmakers it was inexplicable that he visited Epstein's private island. Lutnick described his encounters with Epstein as meaningless and inconsequential, Ansari said. So why'd you lie about them? That doesn't make any sense. You don't lie about things that are meaningless and inconsequential. You lie about things that are meaningful and consequential, actually. He's like, yeah, I saw the dentist chair and I saw the pornographic art and I saw the kids in cages, but then I saw a massage table and I thought, ooh, this is kind of weird. Now, this is a little disturbing. A massage table for massages? What? I'll be in the dentist chair downstairs looking at the mask of my own face on the wall, please. Okay. Arrest him. Arrest him immediately. Howard Lutnick is a criminal. I cannot understand how this is going so badly for him, except if he's lying about everything. That's my only conclusion I can come to. Following closed-door testimony from Howard Lutnick before the House Oversight Committee on his ties to Jeffrey Epstein, Democrats called the Commerce Secretary's performance embarrassing, saying if Donald Trump had seen the video transcript, he would have fired Howard Lutnick, said Congressman Ro Khanna. You know, this is another issue that I have here. Okay, James Comer, that's one. He seems to be speaking negatively about it. But it sort of just goes in line with everything else that we're seeing, that it's like, why is it that the vast majority of congressmen quoted in telling what I assume to be the truth about Howard Lutnick have unpronounceable Star Wars names? Why is that the case? Where are the Christian white men that are actually concerned about corruption in our government and standing up against it? Seriously, Ro Khanna, like the people they quote in this article, are Ro Khanna, Suhas Subramaniam, Ansari, Yasemin Ansari. It's like, is this really like the dividing line of American culture? It's like, you're either like an insane progressive Democrat, immigrant, or you're like a slave to Israel. It's like, these are our options, I guess. It kind of sucks, but it's like, good. I'm glad Yasemin and Kana and, you know, whoever else, Chewbacca, are coming out against Howard Lutnick. We need people like this. I just don't understand where the moral compunction of the white Christian conservative people are. Apparently James Comer spoke out about this. He said he was, oh, no, he's celebrating him. Okay. Okay, great. So the one white Christian guy is like, he was very forthcoming. There's no cover up as suggested by Democratic members of the panel. We asked very substantive questions the first hour, Comer added. The Democrats during their hour repeated the exact same questions. Yeah, I just don't believe you, James Comer. You know why I don't believe you that there's not a cover up? Because there is so clearly and obviously and apparently and evidently a cover up happening in real time right in front of all of our faces. So don't tell us there's no cover up, you idiot. But okay, we're going to have to go with whatever, radical Muslims on this one, because at least they are capable of telling the truth about Jewish pedophiles. Fine. Now, I'm not saying Howard Lutnick's a pedophile. I'm saying he was friends with pedophiles. I'm saying he hung out on islands with pedophiles. I'm saying he lied about his activity with pedophiles. And I'm saying everything you've ever asked Howard Lutnick about this pedophile has been, in some form or another, a lie, covering up the truth, a distraction, a blatantly obvious fabrication. So I don't know that he's a pedophile at all. I have no evidence of that. I do think the mask on the island of the pedophile looks an awful lot like him, but that could be a coincidence. He's got that kind of face. My God. Lutnick testifies he can't recall why his family lunched on Epstein Island. He doesn't even remember anything about it. Which, again, that's, you know, can you remember things from 2012? I sure can. Why can't he? Like, unless you have an explanation for why, that doesn't make any sense. Anyway, he's a liar. He's in on the cover-up. That's my opinion. And I don't know what other explanation, you know, corresponds all these realities. And, you know, it is one of those things where, you know, we've been talking about Spencer Pratt quite a bit in the mayoral contest in California. And it's another one of those things where on one side you have really sort of the iconic Democrat. I can't even remember her name, but it's the woman who rolled her eyes, right? That woman. She really is emblematic. She goes to California, dead broke. She becomes a homeless activist and like starts working with homeless people paid by the government. She ends up a multimillionaire. Now she's running for, you know, the governorship in California and is literally just like, yeah, we're going to let homeless people sleep on your kid's playground at their elementary school. People are like, we don't want that. And she's like, ugh, whatever. Genuinely insane. Spencer Pratt running an amazing campaign. His ads are just like the stuff of legend, really incredible stuff. And then people start posting all these clips of him just like waving the Israeli flag and just being like dedicated to Israel. And it's just like, this is it. These are our options that are being presented to us by the world order now. These are always going to be your choice. An insane leftist, socialist, crypto communist immigrant or somebody who worships Israel. And as long as you choose one of those two, the plan continues unabated, right? The one thing you cannot possibly have is somebody that's genuinely conservative, genuinely Christian, anti-Israel, pro-America. It just, you get destroyed. You get utterly and completely destroyed. If you want to be pro-America, if you want to be conservative, if you want to be a Republican, you have to, first and foremost, prioritize above all else the status of Israel and the Jewish people. And it's pathetic, and it's manufactured, it's deliberate, it's not real, it's not that these are the only choices that we make, it's that these are the only choices that are presented to us. It's time for us to choose our own side and not have to be the victims of immigrants or the slaves to a foreign country. Can we be America for once? We'll be right back.
I have been very blessed and honored in 32 years on air and 28 years of InfoWars to have seen the whole world change. When I first got started, almost nobody knew about the globalists. People were literally in the dark. Look how far we've come. We are exposing them. Jeffrey Epstein, the pedophile rings, the poison COVID shots, the open borders, the global wars, the 5G, all of it is coming out. Humanity is rallying. This is the fourth turning. This is the great awakening. It is the answer to their great reset. I am so proud of humanity, and I'm so thankful to all the viewers and listeners who over the years have supported us by prayer, word of mouth, and financial support at thealexjonesnetwork.com. So InfoWars has been shut down, but we've launched the Alex Jones Network. We plan to crank this sucker up. We got new studios, they're even bigger, being built. And we want to go 19 hours a day live by the end of 2026 from 5 a.m. until midnight. So if I build it, will you come? Yes, I know you will. So now more than ever, go to thealexjonesstore.com and get incredible supplements. Our methylene blue is the best. Our methylene red is proprietary. Our bovine colostrum, the widest selection of Patriot Apparel, incredible collectible knives, and so much more. You are literally financing the tip of the spear and the resistance that the tyrants and the globalists hate above everything else. InfoWars is a proven winner. They have a URL. They have an old studio. That means nothing. You are the InfoWar. And if you accept this mission, if you take action, if you spread the word, if you share our links, AlexJonesLive.com, the news site, the live feeds, the articles, the videos, it's incredible. If you share the feed with everybody you know at AlexJonesApp.com, the free Droid or Apple download of the app, it is insane. All the power lies with you. That's why when callers call in and thank me, I say, thank me. I would fight this no matter what. I'd fight it in a ditch. I'd fight if I was homeless. We're all in this together. You have all the power, but you have to use the power now. Share the feeds, AlexJonesLive.com. Share the URL, AlexJonesApp.com. And go to thealexjonesstore.com with the widest selection of Patriot apparel to wear your uniform of liberty openly and proudly. It's such an adventure to wear this apparel and to get the incredible supplements that will empower your life so that you'll know how real this is. I only sell stuff that really works, so I want you to get it and take it and love it and have a great response. We have a 90+% reorder rate. So many of you are on the fence. Take action now. Step into a wider world. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today and support this broadcast. But regardless, take the feed, take the live links at alexjoneslive.com/show and on Rumble and Alex Jones on X, the Alex Jones Show on Rumble, and share those links and it changes the world. You are unstoppable when you decide to get up at the plate and take action. This is real. This isn't hype. You've seen the results. Now the ball's in your court. AlexJonesLive.com and AlexJonesApp.com. Take action. You are the reincarnation of Paul Revere. You are unstoppable. The globalists are in deep crap. Take action now at AlexJonesLive.com and AlexJonesApp.com. And I want to be clear. I don't own the AlexJonesStore.com. Bigly, that owns the Alex Jones Network, does. We've got a major deal with Rumble to push our information. It's already top on Rumble, but to supercharge it. The most important coordinate in this fight is rumble.com/Alex Jones Live. rumble.com/Alex Jones Live. We are already at the top of Rumble. But we're going to go even further partnering with them. This is the Coordinates of Liberty. Take action right now at rumble.com/Alex Jones Live. And we are unstoppable. The power of humanity is unstoppable if you simply unleash it now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, War Room Live on Rumble. Follow us on X at War Room Show. Got a lot to cover here in the final segment. I'm just trying to figure out where to start. We can start, actually, with clip 11 here. This goes to what I was saying at the very beginning of the show, that, you know, I don't know whether this is just because, you know, the Trump administration is feeling the heat a little bit, feeling like the midterms are coming up faster than they expected and are trying to, you know, actually make some moves in time for it to actually resonate with the voters. But the FBI is now raiding the office of a Virginia Democrat state senator for corruption charges. Let's watch.
We'd go back to this, and now we can. Federal agents are arresting people in that string of FBI raids across Virginia. This is all connected to an influential Democrat in the Commonwealth of Virginia, State Senator Luis Lucas. They are at her office executing warrants as a part of a major corruption probe. So I want to go back now to Alex Hogan, who's there. Alex.
Hi, Harris. So you can still see that the FBI are behind me. We've been seeing them throughout the morning bringing boxes in and out. They also told staff members they needed to leave the building. We heard some of those employees coming out saying that they were told they had to leave and they were not allowed back inside. I do want to give you some context of where we are. The FBI not only arriving here at this location, but also at the dispensary, the cannabis dispensary, just across the parking lot. And this is a look at what it looked like earlier today with the FBI agents arriving, SWAT teams getting out of their vehicles with weapons, telling people inside that cannabis dispensary to put their hands up and to come outside. At least three people were taken into custody. Federal law enforcement say that they're carrying out these court-authorized criminal search warrants at more than 10 locations across the state. Again, this is the state senator Luis Lucas's office behind me, but we're also learning that she is connected to this dispensary here. Senator Lucas is president pro tem, meaning she's one of the highest and most powerful figures in the entire state legislature. And when she arrived here, I asked her about being here as the FBI raided these locations. Take a listen.
Is there anything that we can say about what they're doing?
I don't know what's going on. I just came from another floor. So I'm just going to wait until they tell me.
So again, dozens of members of the FBI arriving here and being here throughout the last hour, taking boxes of documents we could imagine from the office behind me. They're also still at this cannabis dispensary. We have seen the senator circle around a couple times in her vehicle. Clearly, as we heard her say in that comment, that she doesn't know why they're here. A lot of questions for the people in the community who are coming out taking pictures, wondering, again, what their senator could potentially be involved with, as we're waiting to hear more information as well. Harris.
All right, Alex, thank you. Keep us posted as you have. Great reporting.
Okay, so very interesting. FBI raids of Democrats' office jolts Virginia politics. Two people familiar with the case said the search of the lawmaker's business office was related to a Biden-era investigation of possible corruption and bribery related to marijuana dispensaries. It is the same woman. So let's go to clip 35 here. This was just 10 days ago. Is the woman who just had her office raided by the FBI. Let's watch.
I have the pleasure of following you on Twitter. And for everybody who's watching and listening right now, if you do not follow Senator Lucas on Twitter, I could not recommend a better follower, a better follow. I told this to you when we were first logging on off camera, but there is no bigger badass than you. And I mean that in the nicest way humanly possible. It is exactly the fight mentality that I wish so many Democrats imbued here.
But what's good for the goose is not good for the gander. Well, that's not the way it is from where I came. I am a product of the civil rights movement, and even though I may not get physical, I am going to fight back.
Yeah. It might not get physical. It will get criminal, though. It will get criminal. And we're seeing that. Again, do they even care? Do Democrats even care? Or do they think it's smart? Do they think she's, like, clever and it's just a bummer she got caught? Because I don't think Democrats care. I don't know why they don't care. They really don't care. You know, maybe this goes back to that study. It just keeps popping into my mind where they tested men and women and they had them watch a game that two people were playing. And they asked about how they felt about the person who lost. And both men and women said they felt sorry for the guy who lost. Then they have him watch another game where a guy cheats, tries to cheat, loses anyway. They ask him again, do you feel bad? The men said, no, I don't feel bad. The dude tried to cheat. The women still feel bad. And I can't help but wonder if you can't extrapolate that to cheating as a concept, to taking shortcuts and screwing people over as a concept, where it's like, why don't you care? Why doesn't it matter to you that these people are shameless hypocrites and liars and scumbags and scam artists? Why don't you care about that? I really want to know. And the only reason I could possibly understand, even though I don't agree with it, but I can only possibly rationalize this, if it's true that the Democrats like really do believe that they're fighting some sort of Nazi white supremacist threat. And so it's like, sure, they steal some money. Sure, they, you know, didn't keep water in the reservoir, so my city burned down. But you want me to vote for Hitler? I don't think so. Like, that's the only thing that makes sense to me, is you have to be able to rationalize your approval, your de facto support of criminality, or you're just dumb because you're electing people that are literally screwing you over continuously over and over and over and over and over again. And, you know, California might be the best example of this. We can go to clip number 50 here. This is David Spade, actor David Spade, talking about a bill that was introduced in Congress in California to basically cover up the immense, unrelenting fraud of the Gavin Newsom administration. So let's go to clip 50 here. This is actor David Spade.
The same broader problem with people paying taxes in California when they're building a $100 billion train to Sacramento, San Francisco area, that I don't know if everyone's clamoring for it when you could take $10 billion and probably fix a lot of problems in California. But they keep pushing this 10-year thing about the train. That's just one of the crazy things. The homeless, they lose $20 billion, but they want more money for it. That's why people get tired of paying taxes and going, well, what are you doing? Gavin Newsom just vetoed a bill asking for an audit of where the money for homeless goes. He said, not a chance. You're not going to see that. That's,
well, I don't think anyone could disagree with this. There are states, I don't have them offhand, who basically you go to their website and they tell you where all the money's going.
Yeah.
Line by line. Maybe it's thousands of pages a year, but you can see where it's going. Mm. So when there's, he's behind the curtain, don't pay attention to Gavin Newsom, you know, it's a little
it's
bit
just frustrating because you go, well, yeah. You can't ask for more. I mean, if someone's, if you're in a household and someone's blowing all the money, you go, what are you spending it on? Don't worry about it. Just give us more money. You go, well, I'd like to see some, something. And if it's fixing homeless, great, but don't just take it and then be like, homeless has gotten worse. You go,
it's like, but you just, excuse me, Gavin Newsom, excuse me. could we ask where, the $20 billion went, or?
That's a great question, but no.
Garth, I'm sorry.
That was Garth asking?
It was Garth, a little bit of Garth. But
I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars. Like, again, we talk about these numbers and just sort of throw them around. $20 billion, $200 billion, who cares, right? Like, $20 billion. I mean, to take it to just a smaller metaphor type thing, right? Like, you pay an exterminator to get the rats out of your house. If you pay him $20,000 to do that, and then the end of it, the rats have taken over your house, and you're like, what did you do? And he's like, you're not allowed to ask me that, actually. I need another $20 billion to do it again. It's like $20 billion. Again, it's just, it's unbelievable what you could build with that, what you could make with that, what you could do with that. Where did it go? Where did it go? What is it being used for? The homeless population doubled at least in that same time period in California. It's not just outrageous fraud and grift. It's, I don't even know what to call it. I don't even know what to call it. What do you call it when, like, they're not just taking the money. They're taking the money to solve a problem. The problem gets significantly worse, and then they demand more of your money. And if you don't give it to them, you go to jail because you have to pay your taxes. And if you try to leave the state, they want to tax you for leaving the state. It's madness that anybody ever votes for these people. It has to be fraud. The votes have to be fraud. Who would vote for this? Who would rehire the exterminator that, you know, dropped off a sack of live rats in your attic? Like, this doesn't make any sense. It's got to be fraud. I don't know what else it could be, to be honest with you. But that's just, it's just like you just like, let's peek in on how California's doing. Oh, you're right. Everything is on fire. Literally, in some cases. Let's move on now. We are going to move on. We're going to move on to the UFOs. We're going to move on to the aliens. We're going to move on to the probably oldest PSYOP on the books. I mean, Wernher von Braun talked about this. The Nazi that got us to the moon. He talked about this in like the 40s, saying, yeah, one day they'll do a fake alien invasion to unify everybody on Earth. Like, this is maybe the oldest and most well-known psychological operation ever, and yet they're doing it. They really are doing it. And they're doing it in the most ham-fisted way possible. And I cannot help but fear the gullibility of the American people, especially when placed in a state of fear. They're totally going to fall for this. Everybody's going to fall for this. It's going to suck. Once again, just like COVID, we're going to have to just sit here, tell the truth, and watch as everybody goes completely insane. So please tell your friends and family, like right now, you got to go talk to your friends and family who might be susceptible to stuff like this and just lay it out for them. Aliens are not real. They are psyoping you. And predict it. Go, look, here's what they're about to say. They're about to say that aliens are real, that they're interdimensional, that they've been on Earth for a long time, probably that they created humanity and are, you know, benevolent gods. They'll probably take credit for some extraordinary things that have happened in the past. They'll point to things that don't have explanations and say, aha, see, this is the aliens. That'll give credence to the, you know, statement they're making. They're introducing this through the churches, so there's going to be a spiritual element to it. Like, you've got to go tell people right now so that when it happens, they go, oh, right, Harrison told me about this. I know this is going to happen. It's not going to be real. Like, you've got to tell people now, because by the time they see the report on CNN, it will be in their brain and inextricable. Okay, you've got to preempt this lie. Like, this is one of the oldest memes on the books, right? From Moongazer at Joey Beast Market. And it's the libtards pointing, oh my God, aliens, that's just like the movie. Go to dot cam, guys. Oh my God, it's just like the movie. And you've got the World Economic Forum projector and the aliens saying, there is no God, we made you. You guys should form a one world government, by the way, lol. Oh my God. Oh my God, we should, we totally should. Guys, we gotta do a world government. The alien gods told us. You can't fall for this, folks. Yeah, I mean, if there should be, we gotta have a mission here. Maybe we should print out this meme and just plaster it all over telephone poles and walls all over the place. Just preempt the scam because they are running with it, folks. And it's probably got something to do with Iran, if I had to guess. And Israel, it's all sort of lining up. I mean, you've got this big push from Israel, the $730 million propaganda. A lot of that, if not most of it, is going towards propagandizing the evangelical, non-denominational, Israel-worshipping, satanic, faux-Christian cult here in America. Sorry if I'm insulting you, but you deserve it. Wake up, for the love of God. And it's not a coincidence, I don't think, that these very same people, these very same churches, these very same non-denominational Schofield Bible suckers are the ones who are now being given the secret classified information about the upcoming alien disclosure so they can prepare their congregations. I think it's Israel. I think the aliens are Jewish, if I had to guess. I think maybe we need to, before we freak out about the aliens, let's see if they'll eat pork, okay? Let's put some sort of test to them. Are you really aliens? Or are you Mossad? Because I have my questions. Foreign agents gone wild from Gen X Girl. Gen X Girl 1994 on X. Pastor Rob Stern's Eagle Wings, who performed at APAC and was a guest speaker at the 1000 Israeli Ambassador Summit, is now getting paid $700,000 by the Israeli government to lobby lawmakers in Congress without registering as a foreign agent under FARA. And it's the same, and of course this was just part of what she's talking about, the 1,000 Israeli ambassadors and all this stuff. It's the same people that are now being given the exclusive first look at the alien invasion. I wonder why. Gee, I wonder why. Kash Patel, meanwhile, confirms the UFO files have been delivered for release. Ooh, everybody said, I'm so tantalized. It's so tantalizing. I totally believe you. There's the report about Kash Patel. And here's the story from the Daily Mail. Religious leaders told, quote, prepare now for UFO disclosure to unleash Bible-changing revelations. Because it's from Satan, folks. It's from Satan. Influential pastors are claiming they've been told to prepare their followers for shocking revelations about UFOs that may upend belief in the Bible. Perry Stone, a well-known evangelist, author, and Bible teacher from Tennessee, warned that fellow pastors were recently invited to a secret meeting with U.S. intelligence officials to prepare for the release of secret files on extraterrestrials. According to Stone, the officials warned a small group of pastors with a large reach in the Christian community that the government was about to release reports and possibly videos of aliens and spacecraft which were not from this planet. In the April 27th video posted to his YouTube channel, the evangelist claimed that pastors were told about the existence of reptilian creatures, UFOs, and materials from a non-human origin, and other things that almost sound like something out of a sci-fi movie. Oh, and your first response was to rebuke it in the name of Jesus Christ and to decry the satanic attempt to undermine the spiritual significance of Christianity. Oh, no. Oh, you fell for it. Oh, okay. Your response wasn't to immediately see through this as a blatant and obvious attempt to co-opt the Christian religion, to distort and ultimately destroy it. Your first response was to be total gullible suckers, huh? Sort of explains why you preach the things you preach. Officials in the secret meeting allegedly said the information on its way may cause some Christians to question how the universe was created and even lose faith in religion. Well, as long as Israel exists, we'll have somewhere to pray to, okay? It's not going to work. I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. The November 2025 documentary, The Age of Disclosure, alleged that there's been an 80-year cover-up on UFOs and alien technology. Stone also claimed in the April 27th video, government officials warned these religious leaders that non-Christians might panic and turn to churches for answer. They're going to freak out, and they're going to come to pastors, ministers, and teachers and say, what is this? Is this really real? The reported meeting involved approximately six Christian leaders, including Bishop Alan Didio of Revival Nation Church, who confirmed that he was part of the extraordinary gathering. Yeah, Revival Nation Church. That's a non-denominational church right there. They're the ones who will be led like lambs to the slaughter. Unfortunately, they're going to drag us all with them. Let's go to clip number five here. I assume this is one of the pastors that was invited saying what he thinks about the aliens, which are not from a different planet, but obviously from another dimension. Let's watch.
So you look more human with reptilian skin, but humanoid. They're hybrids. They mixed it in a lab. Come on now. Okay, so it's not from another planet. And they don't even look like you think they look. So who's in charge of that? So this is the things that I've never talked about before. I probably never will again, but thank you for coming. But this is the thing that we're dealing with. We're dealing with the book of Revelation. These things are going to come out of the earth. They didn't come on spaceships. These are interdimensional beings. And those who have enough sodium pentothal in their system, when I ask them, will tell me the truth, no matter what agency they work for. They will tell me the truth, and that is they're interdimensional. They're not coming from far away. They're coming from below your house. And they're waiting for a certain time to come up on the earth. And God's not letting them be exposed yet.
Yeah. No, they're waiting for that moment when bunch of Christian pastors get suckered by the U.S. government into telling all of their congregations that aliens are real. When, like, even just, like, I don't get, I mean, these are pastors, right? These are Christians. So if you tell me that there's some sort of interdimensional spirit that's not from a different planet, but is actually here waiting to be revealed, those are called demons, and the Bible is full of stories about them. How do you not recognize this? What are you talking about? Have you never heard of demons before? Are you not aware that it's literally the one of the main bad guys in the whole Bible? Anyway, this whole thing is just very upsetting, the way it's moving forward. And the way they are apparently doing it, as ridiculous as it all is. And I want to talk about one more story before we close out here today. And this is all alleged, and I have no evidence for any of this that I'm about to present. But Candace Owens did a long live stream yesterday where she talked about her interactions with the Daily Wire. And one of the stories she told I thought was very, very interesting. She didn't really hammer home the absurdity of this, but here's the story, totally, you know, unverified. So this is all rumor I'm telling you here from Project Constitution, who is not a particularly trustworthy source in my opinion. Mugshot obtained of alleged sexual predator who works at the Daily Wire and is BFFs with Ben Shapiro. I don't think that's even a claim. Here's the problem. If you got something to say, just say it. You don't have to call him BFF with Ben Shapiro. I don't think that's ever been the claim. The claim is that he was an employee of Ben Shapiro and worked with him. Project Constitution says, I've obtained the mugshot of the alleged sexual predator who until recently was an employee at Bent Key, the children's programming division of Real Daily Wire. Yes, this is the same man who personally fundraised, whose personal fundraiser received a direct $500 donation from Ben Shapiro himself. As a journalist committed to accountability and transparency, I believe it is my professional duty to expose the massive hypocrisy. The Daily Wire markets itself as a moral alternative for your family, while their top executive is personally bankrolling individuals who are now indicted for some of the most horrific crimes against minors. They tell you they're fighting to protect your children. In reality, they are protectionism for their inner circle. Keep your family safe. And it's got this picture of this guy. So, again, I don't know if it's true. They apparently have the records of this guy. He's apparently in jail for claims of, like, sharing child sex abuse material. That, again, is the claim, and that's what Candace Owens made yesterday. And the claim she made was that they didn't fire the guy right away. And I don't know if it's true, but if it is, it's pretty hilarious, to be honest with you, that you have, on one hand, an employee who simply disagrees with the state of Israel. And it's like she's fired. They're stalking her. They're trying to destroy her life. They're suing her over and over and over again. She's the devil. They're mounting campaigns. They're relaunching her show with somebody else hosting it to parody her. And it's just like this vicious outpouring. And of course, the firing was nearly immediate. And then they've got a guy who works for them who's accused apparently of soliciting nudes from underage girls and sharing images of, like, toddlers and sexual activity. And they're like, well, let's let this play out. Let's, innocent until proven guilty. Let's not jump the gun on this. Let's see how it plays out here. And it's like, if that doesn't tell you where your priorities are, I don't know what does. So I don't know if this guy's guilty or not. I'm not trying to get sued by Ben Shapiro. I'm just saying, in the world of the Daily Wire, according to Candace Owens, merely questioning Israel gets you fired right away. Sharing pedophile material is a wait-and-see policy. We'll see how this plays out. We don't want to throw the guy under the bus, after all.
Huge new mega sale, and it's a fundraiser for the new network. We need your support. Plus, the products are incredible. Up to 40% off on methylene blue tincture and methylene blue caps. We have the best. You're insane if you don't take it. Ultra DNA Revival that has all of the super nutrients in it that supercharge your whole body, like NAD, you name it. Up to 35% off methylene red tincture, the bovine colostrum, the MK Ultra Brain Booster, 30% off all apparel. There's not much market for the apparel. So that is a huge deal. Shirts, hats, hoodies, the widest selection, thealexjonesstore.com. I need your support. Ultramethylene Blue Gummies, the first run, they're super strong. It's even stronger than, it's the same company, but the way they make it, it's really concentrated when it goes into the gummy. 58% off, that's about to end.
And it goes on and on and on. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And finally, the sister site of TheAlexJonesStore.com, RealAlexJones.com. They just hold back. It's a sister site because we kept it separate from InfoWars. That was the site that went to just build the fledgling Alex Jones Network. And so they always hold back 10% of inventory, where it's coins or knives or collectible, you know, limited edition t-shirts or Faraday bags. They hold it back. So there's only a few hundred left of the five different designs, limited edition, laser engraved, World War II, but updated modern, skull crusher, brass knuckles, 10-inch, double-edged, stainless steel, razor sharp. Your last chance to get those at an incredibly low price, only $79. These knives are like 100-something bucks in stores. TheAlexJonesStore.com doesn't have them, only RealAlexJones.com. And there's other deals that are only at RealAlexJones.com, so be sure and take advantage of that and check it out. If something's sold out, The Alex Jones Store, check out RealAlexJones.com. Hour number two, straight ahead. Share the live feeds now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.